Hey everybody, what the fuck is going on, internet land, my friends? Today is going to be a lot of fun. The Joe Rogan Experience podcast is brought to you by onnit.com. That's O-N-N-I-T, makers of Alpha Brain, Shroom Tech Sport, and Shroom Tech Immune, and New Mood. We got some supplements for your brain, son, if you're interested in nootropics. In all seriousness, that's what Alpha Brain is. It's a blend of nutrients that are supposed to enhance your brain's ability to produce neurotransmitters. They make you a little bit smarter.
Does it work?
Yeah, it works. Yeah, I've been experimenting with nootropics since I was a young man, and there's been a lot of different formulas that have come out. Like there's a guy named Bill Romanowski. Mm-hmm. You know who he is? A former football player. Get right up in the mic.
I heard him before, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, well, he suffered a lot of concussions. This is where I found out about it. Hmm. He suffered a lot of concussions, and he started taking different nutrients that are designed to sort of stimulate your brain function, and he created his own sort of blend of them, and it's called Neuro One, and that's how I got into nootropics, from his stuff.
Have you ever seen it? Make like a really stupid motherfucker.
No, I can't do that. I can't do that. You know what it does? It honestly, it for me, it feels like things come a little smoother, if that makes any sense.
No, I understand.
It's like I know there's levels of brain function, and you got to figure out, well, what is that? What are the levels of brain function? What is it when I wake up in the morning and I just feel like a fucking dummy? My brain is foggy. I don't know what's going on. Like, if I do an interview at like 8 o'clock in the morning, I sound like a fucking idiot. It takes me a while to like get that brain cooking.
So these more for like powers of retention than things that are already in your mind, so your memory is just quicker or something like that?
I have no idea.
Because they say that people retain everything, or usually a huge amount of what they see every day, and that is just subconscious. So maybe what these things are doing, or maybe what they're starting to be able to do, is to pull those memories straight forward, because we have so much information in our mind.
I don't know, man. That's a huge stretch. I don't know. You'd have to be a scientist to even figure.
Saying.
I think what it is there's.
How long have these been out now?
Alpha Brain? I think we've been out for like 2 years now.
But that's what I'm saying. See, we're at the very, very beginning of something like this then.
Well, there's been a bunch of different studies on all sorts of different nootropics, and some really positive results are starting to come back. There's a new additive that we put into Alpha Brain. I don't even know the name of the new shit. If you're interested in any of this stuff, go to onnit.com. That's O-N-N-I-T. And it's all explained in detail. But whatever this new shit that we just put into Alpha Brain, that's the technical term for it. It's been shown to improve golfers. I don't know. All these different things. What they do is it has everything firing on like all the right points. You know what I mean? If it makes me feel like the difference between when I take it and I don't take it is sort of like the difference between not having a cup of coffee and having a cup of coffee, but not really, because it's not like an addictive feeling. It's not like a like if I don't like I get really excited about having coffee. I can't wait to have it. And then I get it, I'm like, oh, it's like a little fix for me. It's probably not
caffeine.
Good for you. Yeah, I mean it's definitely they say it's okay if you drink a cup a day, but really, why is it okay if you drink a cup a day? I mean, why is it okay to take a certain amount of stimulants? I mean, is it really? Mm. I'm not really sure.
If
it's
too much of anything makes you an addict.
But the Alpha Brain doesn't make you feel stupid when it's over. It's not like you have an up and then there's a down.
All right, cool.
Gets everything loose. It's a fascinating subject, and there's a lot of controversy, but there's a lot of studies and a lot of very promising studies, and we're going to do our own eventually. We're just formulating the final formulation of the blend, and the most recent one is the one that I like the best, and it's hard to tell the difference, though, to be honest with you. It's like maybe I'm just eating better now too. There's a lot of different things that come into factor when it comes to the way your brain works, and that's something that everybody needs to consider.
If you take a nose and then you're on meth, that's not going to help.
Yeah, it's not going to help you. I think the most important thing that anybody could ever emphasize is to take care of your body, take care of your meat vessel. Take care of this thing that's taking you through life. Don't fuck with it too much, man. You should be careful with what you eat. If you eat sugar every day and crap every day, and you're fucking with your body, man. You're fucking with that thing. You're just giving it shit. You're not giving it what it needs, and it's going to have some misfires. And it's going to have some malfunctions.
And then you need to realize that the age-old saying, once a man, twice a baby. You know what I mean? And
what does that mean?
Be even harsher. You come into this world, you know, naked, defenseless.
Right.
And when you see very elderly people, and I think this is, gives me a great respect for all that they've been through in life, a lot of times they need help or they can't move or something like that, and they're dependent on somebody else to take care of them.
Right.
And that, that seeing that vision is supposed to inspire, like, humility in people to be like, yo, you know what? You know, oh, man. Instead, you see people honking their horn, like, walk faster so I can get to nowhere. You know what I mean?
Do you see people honking horns at old people? Is that a New York thing?
Crazy. They're out of control, man. I mean, everybody. I'm from New York, where people are in a rush to go nowhere.
Yeah.
You're rushing from work to get back home to let cable TV wash over you and do nothing.
Well, it's because the idea of New York's ridiculous. What a silly idea. Pack that many motherfuckers into one small area.
I can't let
area.
That ride from a Boston dude, man, but I'm telling you right now.
Just
yeah,
logically, bro.
No, it's
look,
insane.
I'm sort of a Boston dude, but I was born in New Jersey, so
Jersey,
I'm more
right.
of
so
a...
So it's even more of a rivalry. It's yeah. cool.
It just seems crazy. It's a crazy idea to stuff that many people
and
there.
And you know what? I thought about the exact same thing. I went to do a tour in Australia and New Zealand, and I came home... And it just dawned on me, like, people think, oh, you're so smart, Technique. Oh, you think about such, you read all this stuff. I came home and it dawned on me, damn, a human being's natural habitat is not a square of concrete
yeah.
and, like, steel. Like, this is not healthy. You go around New York, you see trees and cages. They're like, oh, there's the park. I was like, yeah, good. A reservation for trees. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Without that, there wouldn't be no oxygen in the city.
It's a weird energy that you get from only people and the things that people have created. It's like an artificial world, like a completely different construct.
It's a city state.
Yeah. It's a weird place, man.
I love it, man.
I bet you do.
I love it. You know,
some
I'm
people,
still
you
there.
You do or you don't,
I'm still
man.
There.
You do
I mean?
Or you don't. Some people love that shit.
Love
my
it,
manager loves it. He wouldn't live anywhere else. Anyway, go to onnit.com to check out if you're interested in any nootropics. I just suggest you Google the subject. There's a lot of controversy. There's a lot of unsubstantiated claims. But there's a lot of real good research that points to the fact that different nutrients can improve mental function. Mm-hmm. And we've combined the best formulation that we know how to make. And if you're interested in it and you try it, there's a 100% money back guarantee for the first 30 pills. So if you try it and you don't like it, you don't feel it, you get your money back. You don't even have to send in the product. We're much more concerned with people not feeling ripped off than we are with making money. I just know that you're going to enjoy it. It's the shit. I'm turned all my friends onto it. Not one of them is not an alpha brain head now. It's the that sounds terrible.
An alpha brain head.
That's so douchey.
It comes in pills.
I apologize. Yeah, it comes in a pill.
All right.
Don't snort it, you freaks.
I was just going to say, yo, after the show, me and Joe will crush that shit up, roll in the L.
Yeah, that's the secret. What if that was the secret the whole time about this alpha brain and I didn't even know about it, that you're just supposed to snort it?
Yeah, just snorting it. You're better off. We also have kettlebells and battle ropes in now. I did my first battle rope work today. That thing's crazy. It's really weird.
You should use
it's so
strength,
awkward. Right? Yeah, I'll do it. I will. We're going to make some videos, too, because people keep asking the different exercises. What kettlebells are is it's an ancient Russian form of strength training.
Yeah.
It's like a cannonball attached to a handle. It's the most manly shit you could ever be involved with in your life, okay? You're swinging around a fucking cannonball. And if it comes to working out, it's like, for me, I think it's the best strength training work that you could do when it comes to, like, real-world application, like your ability to, like...
Definitely.
Like, the strength that really comes up in the real world is, like, deadlift strength and squat strength and bench press strength. That's, like, real-world shit. You know, but there's a lot of people out there like doing curls and tricep extensions.
Well, you're never going to be like sitting on a bench like trying to push.
It's kind of silly.
I've seen the Russian weights. I know a dude that used to do nothing but those.
Yeah.
And he was like, look, if I'm lifting something like this,
this
is like, if all I do is this and that, there's no power in my arm to pull something up like this. Unless I've been doing this with 40-pound weights for years, like... It definitely gave him a different type of strength than I've seen with other people. I think more centered in the body.
Yeah,
something that I didn't get.
It gives you a lot. It certainly strengthens your core, which is like one of those words that people like to use a lot. Mm-hmm. You got to work in your core strength. Your core, you know, becomes some sort of a weird, sort of a classification for exercise. But what's important is the whole thing. Has to work. Everything has to work. And sometimes dudes fuck up and they develop like big arms and shit and a big chest, but their legs don't work that good. Or, you know, they don't have good lower back strength. because they're doing silly exercises. They're not balancing out their body. And the best thing about kettlebell exercises is you can do with just one of these cannonballs, you can literally work out every muscle in your body. And it's the kind of workout that you get. The only thing that's as exhausting is doing jiu-jitsu. To me, that's the only thing that gets me as tired is actually sparring and training. It's such a brutal workout. There's a great DVD to follow called Extreme Kettlebell Cardio Workout that Dragon Door carries. If you can get through this motherfucker's workout with a 35-pound kettlebell, you're an animal. And that sounds like nothing. It's like, what a 35-pound dude. 40 minutes into this thing, you're ready to die. It's incredible how tired it gets.
I'm going to check it out, man.
It's the shit. Anyway, go to onnit.com and check it out. If you use the code Dane Brogan, you can save 10% off supplements. But we literally can't sell kettlebells any cheaper than we're sending them. We're basically sending cannonballs in the mail. It's fucking ridiculous. It's hard to get them made. They're made by Troy, and they're the best kettlebells that we could buy. We found the best shit, and we're selling it for the best price that we can. These things, though, are bulletproof. They will last forever. They will find them after the Armageddon. They will be at the bottom of the new ocean. And they'll go, what is this fucking cannonball with a handle on it? So you buy them once, you got them for life, and literally you might not ever need to go to a gym again. You can do almost anything except chin-ups. You know, that's the only thing that I would say. I'd say between chin-ups, bodyweight squats, and a couple of kettlebells, that's like all the equipment you ever need. Go to onnit.com, check it all out, you dirty freaks.
They're probably good for murder also. You could probably kill somebody with them.
Yeah, you could,
there's nothing
Brian,
probably about
I
that.
I don't
swinging
know why would
you
even suggest that.
But I mean, like, as a weapon. Will. You could use it as a weapon, keep it by your bed if somebody breaks in.
Brian, you can use sex as a weapon. Don't you listen to Pat Benatar? You
yeah, imagine that. Somebody breaks in. Listen, if you don't leave my house right now, I'm going to fuck you.
Yeah.
I'm going to shoot you in the legs, and I'm going to fuck you after. Fuck you. That's really got to scare the shit out of anybody, though.
Yeah, that would be not what you expect to hear. You could totally throw somebody off. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Immortal Technique is here. We're going to get shit popping.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan Podcast. Check it out.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan Podcast by night, all day.
You gonna hit that music?
Yeah. Brian not playing
is not a real audio engineer.
Shout to Southpool.
I can read your mind. I am the maker of rules. Dealing with fools. I can cheat you blind.
My truth is the Ark of the Covenant buried in Ethiopia. Watch who you fucking with, a Minneapolis Somalian. When I go home, the world I used to know is gone, and I will live on my own. For what shall it profit a rapper with creative control to sign a deal with the devil and lose his soul? My stillborn first expression is cold, like the faces of slave masters on a paper fold. Subliminal racial supremacy choking me quick, like the bedtime stories of Joseph Smith. Lynch mob gunning for me, trying to murder my seeds. A shorty put him in the Nile, in a basket of reeds, and now I stare into the future with a spiritual flashlight, wondering who the fuck was me in a past life. Bad diet, fuck raw, die young, fast life. Same as a crash flight that took off when the music died on your last night. Tell them the truth and they call you a traitor. Talk to them honestly and they call you a hater. Losing my composure cause the message is urgent.
Talking that was badass.
You want to hear the whole thing?
Cursing at the serpent, Sumerian demons who brush their wings against the air that I'm breathing. A heathen with nothing left to believe in, even a reason for living that was forgiven by God. And not religion. Envision Jesus risen from the dead like Horus in a Baptist church, shaking off the rigor mortis. The border should be illegal instead of the people that were here before the Bible and all of its sequels. I speak to the detached and unrealistic that were born normal but turned socially autistic. We resisted Homeland Security's mission because I know what they really envision.
I am the eye in the sky.
first of all, how badass is that lyric? I am the eye in the sky looking at you. I can read your mind.
You need to.
I
you
am
need
the
to.
Maker of rules, dealing with fools. Have, I can cheat you blind.
Have you done like an extended version of that song? Because that song's like crack. Like I want. I could hear like that for two more times.
Big shout out to my brother Southpaw, who's responsible for producing that. It's off the CD I just gave you, The Martyr.
Yeah.
It's free. So many other things in this world, some people think that nothing's free, but that actually is free. You can go to viperrecords.com and you don't have to fill out a stupid survey. You don't have to sit through a 15-second Vivo commercial. You press one button and then 9 minutes later you have a 16-track album absolutely free by Immortal Technique featuring a lot of hip-hop underground greats and legends. You know, we got Styles P from The Lox, Vinny Paz, Poison Pen, Diabolik, Suave Seva, Kid. I mean, I could just go on. Dead Prez.
And you decided to release it free?
Absolutely for free. My brother's Killer Mike, Chuck D, Brother Ali is on here. Joel Ortiz, Pumpkinhead, Cornel West is on here. Just so many.
You got Cornel West on your CD?
Yeah, he's doing the outro for me.
Holy shit.
That's awesome.
He's on the movie. That
that's pretty strong, dude. Wait a minute. I mean, you're a rapper. You get Cornel West on your CD. Holy shit.
He's the homie. You know what I mean?
That's pretty impressive, man.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's badass. So the name of it again, one more time for people who are listening?
The Martyr.
The Martyr.
And, you can
and
get
it's
it
available at?
ViperRecords.com. V-I-P-E-R Records.com.
What made you decide to put it out for free?
Well, I mean, it was at a time when I saw that people were struggling financially, economically, and I thought to myself, listen, what's more revolutionary as opposed to being an artist that just has stuff ghostwritten for him and then gives it out to people and gets angry when they download your terrible music? You know, what's more revolutionary than taking hardcore hip-hop from the streets and then music with a message, combining them, you give them to the people absolutely for free, 100%. Plus, they've been waiting so long on this other album I have called The Middle Passage that if I didn't give them something, I would have probably got killed.
It is really, I mean, if you really think about it, it is the best thing you could. I mean, that's what we always feel about this podcast, that, you know, I would never want to charge for it. Like, part of the cool thing about it is that it's free.
Right.
I like doing it for free. I like that you don't have to pay shit.
And you know, it's not just that. It's just like, look, if you really support what I say, yeah, and you like the music, then come to a show.
Yeah,
the same way
exactly.
People listen to the podcast, they'd be like, yo, if you like what we're doing here for free, come see the show. We're going to be live here. We're going to be there. Blah, blah, blah.
And that's what happens for the most part at my shows. It's mostly podcast fans these days. But it's the idea that you decided to just produce a whole CD and put it out like that. I agree that that seems to be the right thing to do.
Well, I mean, a lot of people are doing it now.
You're giving it to them for free. Right. Of course, they're like, when you give people shit for free, you know, you develop like the right kind of relationship. You develop like a giving relationship. You're giving and, you know, you create this sort of mutually beneficial relationship with the people that enjoy your shit. So they actually enjoy, you know, the fact that a lot of people find out about you. They enjoy the fact that the music is good. They enjoy the fact, you know, they get to be a part of it all.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. I didn't know the impact of what I did up until like, you know, like a year or two into it, I really started to get a grasp of it and then slowly accepted the responsibility. And I think there's a big difference in between being an independent artist and being in charge of everything that you have to do in order to be successful and then having, you know, a label babysit you through a 360 deal or something like that.
Are you completely independent? Is that how it works?
I press up my own units and I have a distribution deal, which means that that's about as independent as we can possibly be without me, you know.
I'm completely ignorant about the music business. I don't know nothing about it. So explain to me, like, is it hard to get to the point where you're at, like, to be completely independent and have people know about you? And, like, right, what sort of distribution channels did you have to go through in order to remain independent?
Well, in the very beginning, I had to find individuals that already had a distribution deal because at that point I was just one artist. And they weren't in the habit of saying, all right, we're just going to sign an artist who doesn't have a roster, doesn't have a label. So I found a friend of the family that had a very small label called Viper Records, and I was like, yo, let's help build something here. And eventually it led to a few distribution deals, and now I'm at one where I feel You know, I'm in the right place. I have the right people on my side. It's a much larger and more expansive one than I traditionally had before. But just so people understand out there that may not know, you know, a record deal is essentially a loan with horrible interest rates. Because, you know, even after a loan, you know, what happens when you get a bad loan and you end up paying it all off? You get to keep the property. But mm-hmm. in this case, you don't keep your intellectual property. Your masters and your publishing are owned by somebody else. And if you read the fine contract and the legalese, in perpetuity. And in some cases, that just doesn't make any sense to me.
I think that whole business is completely falling apart, right? I mean, the,
well,
the
record
crumbling, business,
yes.
It's gone down to a personal appearance business. It's become that more, right?
To some extent, I think that's why they implemented the 360 deal, so they felt like they could eat off the shows as opposed to the dwindling record
sales.
When
you say 360 deals, what does that mean?
A 360 deal means that the label now collects on everything, the ancillary rights. You know, if your music is in a movie, if you do a show, they're getting half of the show.
If you do a show?
Yeah, you're getting...
Like, what if you do a reality show, they get the money?
Whatever you do, dude.
If you do, if you were in a record company label...
Whatever you do.
Really? So if you had, like, the Immortal Technique show, and, you know, people traveled around with you with cameras...
And I was signed to a 360 deal before that.
They would take a piece of that.
Yeah.
What are they offering, though?
That's what it depends on what status you have. If you're someone who's built up an independent brand, see, I'll give you an example.
Well, how did you do it?
If I have a good idea, right, and I say to you, Joe, you know, as a company, as a gigantic multinational conglomerate, I got this company about people who get on, you know, the internet and meet other people that are similar and they get to post their pictures. You're looking at me like, oh, yeah, all right, well, how much is it going to sell? And I'm giving you numbers. But let's say I set up something like MySpace, which is obviously now not in its, you know, former glory. But if I say, all right, well, I have this company, MySpace, and it has, you know, I don't know, 20 million people on it signed up. Look at the advertising potential that we have here. Then I can sucker somebody like Rupert Murdoch into buying it for $500 million. And I think it's just the same thing in music. If you've already built up an independent fan base, if you have something that's completely your own, then you're coming to them with everything. And you're saying, listen, I don't need to give you more than just this. You know, I will give you the small percentage, which is usually between 15% and 25%, for just distributing the product, making sure it's in all the stores.
But isn't almost everything distributed like through electronic media now? I mean,
I think
how many actual CDs move? Do they
probably
still
about
sell
half
a lot?
Of, maybe I've sold maybe about 250,000 records of the four albums that I've had out, and I've moved about half of the product, real on the last the record in physical, not in digital. So
wow,
it's still
okay.
About half and
so
half.
Still half.
We're
and
talking
half.
About 40 to 60% of the revenue in certain places.
Do you buy CDs these days or do you download shit now?
Occasionally. You know, if I support an artist, if I like yeah. somebody and I think they're dope and they're a friend of mine, I go to the record store, I'll buy one or two of them.
Yeah, I never see a record store. When the fuck are
I
you
buy all my CDs store? At oh, Starbucks, like I was saying.
I do that sometimes. Yeah. That's probably the last. You know what? I think you're right. I think the last CD I bought was at Starbucks.
I do iTunes too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I do iTunes. Just, like almost all of my stuff is iTunes now. But I wonder how much sound you're losing. How much sound are you losing? Like the
they're
clarity.
Not
wave,
they're
or,
not. They're technically not wave
the
files.
Depth.
They're. I think 720. I mean, it's not perfect, but it's not bad. It's good sound quality. You have to have a certain standard to put it on there, I believe.
Because if you talk to like old time hippie dudes, they always tell you that like vinyl record was the best. Like that was the best quality sound.
You
and
know,
that we lost a little bit going from that to digital. We lost something.
Laserdisc, we lost it when we went to DVDs. Laserdiscs are better quality than DVDs.
Are they really?
Yeah, and it's like
but
it's
better than
the
Blu-ray?
Size. No, I don't think they're better than Blu-ray at all, but better than DVD.
It's probably just too expensive.
Well, Blu-ray tells Laserdisc to suck it. How about that? Blu-ray's the shit. I watched a regular movie the other day, and I couldn't believe how bad it looked. I watched The Ghost in the Darkness. Do you remember that?
It was with
Val Kilmer and Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas and Val Kilmer, they lion hunting.
Val Kilmer was a handsome motherfucker, man. He was handsome and chiseled and shit.
One of those white people conquer Africa movies, right? Yes, nobody in Africa can kill a lion, so they got to bring in two white people from England and America to go kill a lion. You kill a lion, get the fuck out of here, yo. Look, just put a bloody piece of steak right there and just wait there and bang. There
it
you
wasn't
go.
A lion, dude. It was the ghost in the darkness.
It was the ghost in the darkness.
They were intelligent lions. They were setting traps for him.
Intelligent.
Well, it's kind of it becomes kind of weird, but there have been animals like that. that have just strictly decided to eat people. There was a cat, a tiger in India that's been recently going around on Twitter, the Wikipedia about it. This cat in India killed like 400 and something people before they finally killed it.
Maybe he's just trying to get even, man.
No, apparently they just develop a taste for flesh. It's just not normal for them because we're not normally on their food chain. But once they find out about us,
I think we made ourselves not on their food chain. We're on their food chain, homie. If we're you and me go into the jungle like in a loincloth,
oh yeah,
we're
what I mean by we're not on their food chain is that's not a regular part of their diet.
Right.
So they don't recognize us as food necessarily. But
sushi's not a regular part of my diet, but I'll eat the shit out of once, that if I'm hungry. Yeah. You know what I mean? So that's probably tigers, how they see us. Like,
well, tigers, once they find out that they can kill people, they become a real fucking problem. They just go exclusively for people. Yeah, there was a story about this boat in India. Well, there's an area in India called the Sundarbans where over the last 100 years, tigers have killed close to, I think it was 300,000 people. Something insane.
Really?
Oh, yeah, insane number. Insane number over the last 100 years. It's fucking crazy. There's an area where the water, there's two problems with the area. One, the brackish water. Apparently the tigers drink it and it makes them fucking crazy because it's water that's like salty. They really shouldn't be drinking it, and it makes them really incredibly irritated and it makes them super hyper aggressive. And they've been known to kill people like for sport. Like there's this one tiger killed these guys on a boat, swam out to the boat, killed a guy, dragged him to the shore, dropped off his body, jumped back in the water, and he did it 3 times. They couldn't get away from him. Tigers can swim fast, man. Wow. He did it for fun. He did it for fun until he got tired of it.
But you know, cats are really like some of the most ruthless killers in the world.
And
you know
what?
And they'll not only will they kill something, but they'll fuck with it for hours before they kill it. Like, oh yeah, let me just practice on this living thing in front of my kids and slice its face open. And this is how you rip, you know, the hamstring on the animal when you're chasing it. They give lessons of murder.
Yeah. Yeah, they're creepy.
That's a hell of a parent right there. Like, look. Go kill him right now.
Well, what people don't understand is the reason why human beings have the symbiotic relationship with cats is because of rodents. We had the cats around because the cats killed the mice and the rats. And the cats were cool. The cats would hang out with you, and they would go jack the mice and the rats, and they would keep the rats and the mice out of your fucking food. I mean, that was where it all, you know, that's... But they're like killers, man. Your little house cat. Everybody's little house cat. You put a bird in front of it, and it'll jump on that shit and murder it right in front of it.
When we lived in South America, I remember my father reminds me. He said, "Listen, they had cats out there the way we have mice here. Like they would sneak. Feral. They would sneak into. Yeah. They would sneak into your kitchen. They would sneak into your food supply.
Oh yeah.
And Grandmama did not give a shit. She would snap its neck like a breadstick if it got nasty and tried to.
Well, feral cats are very different than regular cats. You know,
street cats. A lot of street animals. Street dogs out there too.
Yeah, those are dangerous animals. They can get really dangerous, and also they carry a lot of diseases
too. Yeah.
Especially that toxoplasma. You know that there's a disease that literally changes men's behavior, and you get it from cats. It's the nuttiest fucking disease ever. Toxoplasmosis. I think it's called Toxoplasmosis gondii is the actual scientific name. I might be wrong, but it comes from cat shit. And the way it happens is these rats get infected.
So that's
infected.
Why they say crazy is cat shit, huh?
Yeah.
Cat shit crazy.
Yeah, for real.
Toxoplasmosis. Yeah, for those of you.
Toxoplasma.
Toxoplasma.
That's toxoplasmosis. I think that's what it's called.
And it can't affect women. It only affects men.
No, it affects women as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're not exactly sure, but it's really dangerous, especially for women if they're pregnant. When women are pregnant, that's why they tell them never fuck with cat litter. Don't touch a litter box, because if they get it and they get infected, it can seriously fuck up with the development of the child while it's in the woman's womb. Yeah, it's a
You're
brain
born
parasite.
Like half cat, half human.
No, it's not that. It just look. It's not. It's whatever this thing is. It's in a lot of people, and you can live with it.
It's a bacteria.
But it altered. It's a parasite.
Oh.
Essentially. It's a like a brain worm, literally.
Wow.
Yeah. And what it does is it fucks with the rats, and it rewires the rat's immune or the sexual reward system, and has the rat sexually attracted to the smell of cat piss. completely changes the rat's, like, the rat's drive and, like, hijacks his whole system and makes his dick hard for cat piss. Literally, his dick swells. Okay? So the rat is horny. I mean, it's the most ruthless shit nature has ever invented, right? So the rat is all horny. He goes over to the cat. And the cat's like, bitch! The cat jacks the rat. Then the cat hangs around with people. And then people get it from the cat. And it's been shown to make people extra aggressive. It's been shown to make them act more impulsively.
Some bath salt type shit. Yeah. Like eat somebody's
well,
face.
I don't think it's that bad, but there's a disproportionate amount of motorcycle victims that test positive for toxoplasma. And they think it also can delay reaction time on some people too. But there's also been a direct correlation between success for successful soccer teams and areas of infestation for toxoplasma. And they think it might actually make men produce more testosterone. So it's possible that it can trick your body into acting more aggressively, being more sexual, producing more testosterone, making you more impulsive. And here's where it gets really crazy. In England and Europe, 80% of France is infested with toxoplasma. 80%
of the French people, people from France.
Yeah, 80%.
You think so?
No, I know so. Like, this is like scientific.
They said 80% of the dudes or people in
general.
People in general.
Yeah.
Well, they are very violent people, Joe. I mean, you know what I think is unfair is when I heard the administration, the Republican administration under Bush, the way they lambasted and hammered the French simply because they didn't want to go to Iraq. And if you think about it, after World War One,
remember when we had Freedom Fries?
That was such a fucking joke, dude. Freedom Fries. Whatever cocksucker came up with that idea, you know, I hope you die in a car fire. It's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my fucking life. Because Freedom Fries should be what you're eating, fucko, because without France, there would be no United States of America. On several occasions.
France just didn't want to get bullied into something crazy. They became pussies to us. They became like cowards.
No, you know what it is? The Middle East was divided a long time ago through a treaty called Sykes-Picot, where the European nations decided that Turkey or the Ottoman Empire was the sick man of Europe, so they cut it up. Everyone got their little slice. England got what's now Iraq and Egypt. France got parts of North Africa, Syria, and Lebanon. So really, it's not that I'm scared to fight. No, that's just not my slice, homie. You take care of your own problems there. If there's an issue over here where I'm getting money and I have the remnants of the Carac de Chevalier and all this legacy of intervention, because realistically, you look at the Crusades, they were run by Normans, by Frenchmen, by people who were maybe 5-6 generations away from a man called Rollo the Viking, who invaded and then became, you know, Duke of Normandy. So you're talking about an individual or a group of people who have been warring and killing
from the beginning,
from the very start. I mean, French people, they get away with it because you think of them in wine and poems. But look at history, and I'm not denigrating the French. I'm saying y'all are wild motherfuckers. Y'all are some very, very violent people. You've been involved in every sort of chaos and melee since
Rome fell. But the modern ones have evolved, and they're like, we're not interested in that anymore. We'd rather make really good wine and fuck.
I mean,
they got a lot of good points.
I can't be mad at that.
The modern French are very cool. They have it down. They're doing the right thing. They're not fucking with the world. You know, the modern French, they don't want to be involved.
They ban high fructose corn syrup
good
and all
them.
That. You know, when I go out
good
to Europe, it's different. Soda tastes different. Food doesn't make you feel as just as heavy
thick
and fat, and you walk out of there like, oh.
Yeah, we're not in any way saying there's anything wrong with being French. I've met a lot of really cool French people. I just find it fascinating when people come from really ancient cultures, because our culture is so goddamn new. You know, and if you look at the human race and look at, like, in the areas where it's been established and culture's been established for the longest, they're really the most backward areas. It's like Iraq. Iraq is Sumer. That's like one of the oldest known
Mesopotamia,
civilizations.
Sumerian.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
like where that's the cradle of civilization.
But even
so
here,
always,
you know,
yeah,
even here we had indigenous people living here thousands of years before anything.
Yeah, oh sure. Well, you know what's really fascinating, what a lot of people don't know, is most of North America was covered in a mile high sheet of ice up until about 10,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. So when everybody was just balling it up in Europe and having a great time and partying all throughout the world, we were covered in ice. You know?
Except for Central America, South America, where you find,
sure,
you know, lots and lots of different peoples. Mostly they focus on Aztec, Maya, Inca, but there are so many other individuals. Like when I came back to Latin America, the Olmecs, you look at their shamans, their tradition of religion, their explanation of human society, their use of psychotropic drugs.
Yeah, they had a completely independent advanced civilization, and that's what people aren't aware of. Like, when you go back, like, many, many thousands of years, what gets really interesting is it's really hard to reach other people. So that was when people were developing very uniquely on their own. You know, cultures develop very uniquely, like, in their own little their own little place. They weren't having, like, the constant intervention that we have from all over the world. So if you look at, like, what the advanced civilization of thousands of years ago in South America, and you look at the Mayan civilization, like, what a fucking fascinating path those guys went down. I mean, what an amazing path these guys went down thousands and thousands of years ago, because no one was fucking with them. Because this is what they came up with. What they came up with was incredible fucking stone structures that mirror the cosmos. And they were doing shit that nobody was thinking about in Europe. Nobody was thinking, but at the same time, nobody was thinking about any of the fucking shit those guys were doing.
You know what my favorite part is? When I hear people say, oh, you know, they had so many scientific advancements, the Aztecs, Maya, and Inca, like the aliens must have helped you to do it. on one level, I think that's pretty interesting, and to even acknowledge for someone to say that there is extraterrestrial life. But at the same time, my question is this: those developments happened over the course of hundreds of years, of thousands of years.
Yeah.
We're looking at American society now that went from being in a fucking horse and buggy 150 years ago to now being on the moon, and everybody's got a cell phone the size of a pack of Tic Tacs and whatnot. So, listen, if the aliens helped anybody, they helped people here in America. They didn't help us, you know what I mean?
Well,
we developed it over hundreds and I say thousands of years of work and science or whatnot. Or then they've been helping everybody the whole time.
That's, I think it's silly to assume that the aliens helped us, but I don't rule out the possibility. Just because I think that the human race is so ridiculous. The whole lot of us, we're so strange and bizarre that I don't. It's just the fact that we even exist.
The talking monkey.
Yeah. The fact that we can send satellites into space. Just the fact that we can do the nutty shit that we can do. I would never rule out that somewhere along the line,
someone
we got
say,
fucked with. Yeah, someone gave us some shit or fucked with us a little bit, or, you know, did some shit with some monkeys and made people. I'm not ruling that out, man. I do not rule that out.
I would say aliens before Bigfoot.
Dude, Bigfoot, I'm going squatching. You shut your mouth. I told you, this fucking
really?
Whole area is very squatchy. You know, there's a lot of trees across the street, I noticed. That's a very squatchy area.
There's some trees right down the block, man. I like them trees.
I'm going Bigfooting, dude.
I'm not mad at those trees. Those
don't,
are Cali
don't be
trees.
Hating. You want to come with me?
No.
Come on, man. We'll go camping.
Yeah. Let's go play in the woods and get raped by some
guy. Dude, we're going to go find Sasquatch. What if we really found one? Came back, we changed the
you
podcast.
You won't. Guess what? You won't.
How do you know that there's not a few thousand of them? Hiding in the woods.
Joe, there's 40,000 just in California.
You know when we're going to know, man? When this fucking, these 30,000 proposed drones are in the sky in the next couple of years.
We would already know from Google Maps or Google Earth.
You think they would see a Bigfoot on Google Maps?
If there's 4,000 or whatever.
Yeah, it'd be like
you
a village of them.
Google Maps.
Or maybe
the
they're in a cave
jungle,
underground.
Yeah, they don't have like a detailed picture of every square foot of the Pacific Northwest rainforest.
I would believe in Loch Ness before I believed
really?
In Bigfoot.
I think Loch Ness is probably just like an eel.
Yeah, it's just
something.
I mean,
a retarded
they
dolphin.
They have found a relic species all over the world. They found something called a coelacanth. In South Africa. They thought that was dead for 60 million years. So I can't even imagine what's at the bottom of the ocean. I don't even want to know. Part of me wants to know, but the other half of me is like, yo, listen, you don't want to wake that shit up. The Kraken or whatever the fuck is down there.
Well, you know, they found evidence that there was something like a Kraken, a giant octopus type creature. Because the problem with what are they called? Cephalopods? Is that what they're called? Mollusks? They're related to mollusks. But what they don't have it, they don't have anything to their body. They're just jelly. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they don't, there's no bones there except for their teeth. So when they die, that's it. Their body just rots. You know, an octopus is it's just one piece of undulating flesh, completely different than our idea of like a bone structure and, you know, a skeletal
no
frame.
No vertebrae, nothing.
Yeah,
like
they don't
that,
have any just... of that shit. So apparently they found fossils of what they think are enormous suction cups, and several of them in a row. And they're pretty sure that what that is that's what's left of an enormous octopus that used to live in the ocean. So the idea of the Kraken, it might have been a real thing. It might have been an enormous octopus.
Or be eaten. Back in those times, Listen, when you ran into something, there was no such thing as a handshake back in like 100 million
BC. But can you imagine if there really was an octopus that took out a boat?
Yeah.
Can you imagine if they actually got that big, like boat size, like those fucking Kraken pictures?
I mean, they had a megalodon, which is basically, you know, we're talking about a great white shark that's, you know, 65 feet long. Jesus. That shit's crazy.
Jesus and like fucking crazy.
And their babies were like the size of great white sharks now. Yeah, like, that would be a baby megalodon, a 30-foot megalodon.
My friend Bud has a tooth in his office, a megalodon tooth.
Oh, yeah?
And you pick it up and you just go, what the fuck, man? It's a fossil. So what, you know, what a fossil is the actual bone gets replaced with minerals in time. So it's like really like a piece of stone. It's like a black piece of stone. I had to explain that to him. Dudes think that this is just, no, it's a bone. That's the actual tooth.
No, the tooth doesn't exist anymore.
This is a fossil of the tooth. Like, I had to explain it to him. He's explaining it. He's telling me, no, it's a real tooth. Look, I paid for it. I got a certificate. So it's real. Like, I'm telling you, this that's not exactly what a fossil is. But anyway, it's so big. It's like a giant blade.
Size of your hand. Like
yeah, it's fucking huge. And you're looking at it like, that was in a, you just picture that in a mouth, and then picture how big that fucking mouth is.
And sharks went through teeth like Carson went through wives. I mean, just we're boom. Talking, boom, boom, next one fell out, boom.
What a crazy animal the world has invented. I mean, the when you just toxoplasma and sharks, the fact that those two motherfuckers exist. You know what I'm saying?
What about a shark?
Cat with, parasite what, that makes you
what
think.
What about a shark with toxoplasma?
What about an octopus? What about an octopus that didn't have tentacles, but they had sharks instead of tentacles?
There's like, sharks at the end?
Yeah, like the legs would be just sharks.
Oh, my God. Why not?
With toxoplasma.
He's ridiculous. He'll do that to you. But, dude, imagine.
That would be crazy.
With shark heads at the end of it.
So much nutty shit.
This is part of somebody's bad trip out there. Someone's about to hit the Joe Rogan's. No! You stole that idea from me.
You know what's really crazy is that these people in South Africa have sharks, the great whites, on some sort of endangered list. So you're not supposed to be killing them. I mean, I read that they're thinking about lifting the ban because another one killed a fucking surfer recently. Like, apparently they're on some sort of endangered list.
One surfer died as opposed to, like, the 100,000 or, like, 12 million sharks that we kill every year or something.
That's a pretty good record, but still, I say all sharks can suck my dick and we should kill every one of them. I'm on team people. And I like surfing. People? And if there's anything out there that will cut me in half when I'm surfing, no. Not really interested in that thing sticking around. I say we send in torpedoes on submarines and just jack every fucking shark we find.
You're wildin'. If we did that, then the other species that they're supposed
to
eat would be right there.
And then we'd have more fish. See what I'm saying, dog?
But we'd have less of other stuff, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You can't completely fuck with the we would probably give rise to some new, intelligent dolphin that knows how to make a gun. You know? You know what I mean? I mean, if you fuck the balance of power up in the ocean like that, you know, who knows what the result is going to be.
Jesus Christ.
The fact that we do that, though, is a part of nature. I mean, it is our own human curiosity that leads us to fuck with things and remove things from the food chain and use our infinite wisdom to change, like, the topography of the earth. But that is also a part of nature because we are all nature, you know? Even if people say that, oh, plastic is unnatural, sort of, but no, it's natural. It's what the shitty humans make.
This brings up an interesting question. I had a conversation with a friend of mine, Matt. If we evolve ourselves, right? Like, if we decide to genetically modify ourselves, and people say that's unnatural, isn't that nature? That us being...
It's all natural.
Where we have the ability now to be intelligent enough to map and select certain genes and to say, all right, you know what? I want to be able to take this gene that says that my organs will fail at like 80 or 90 years, and I'm going to put a zero on that.
Right.
So now, instead of being... you know, 80 when I'm 80, I'm going to look 80 when I'm like 800.
Yeah. I think the idea of natural is getting to be silly, and I think we have to look at it as organic and inorganic. Mm. Inorganic still being natural, but created by people. That's what it is. Organic being something that occurs without any intervention at all. But it's natural that people intervene. It's what they're curious to do. There's a reason why there's people that are in school that are studying genetic engineering. Okay, there's a reason why they're
I would rather have those people figure their shit out in 30 years and then fuck with my milk and the eggs and the food that I eat.
Oh, yeah. Look, it's not all good.
Instead of testing it out on the public now and then hiding it, because the funny thing is that if you're so proud of the product, why won't you put your name on it, Monsanto?
Well, like, see, the real issue is not the science. The real issue is the commerce behind the science, because the science is valid. There's certainly science to improving upon things, and there might be things that cause problems with people that we might be able to solve with science. But the problem is then you get commerce involved, and commerce looks at all they're trying to do is figure out the best way to extract money from this, and the best way to extract money is to patent all their creations and then make a creation that is completely unnatural and force people to buy it. Completely unnatural in that you can't even use the seeds from the plant to grow new plants.
Or there are no seeds.
Right. Or the seeds that you have, they have a shelf life. Like, they'll expire in a short amount of time. There's a fascinating thing that happens when people get involved in big groups of people that are designed to make money, corporations. And there's a great documentary about it called The Corporation.
Oh, yeah. Where, definitely, you know, recommend that.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Where it's they essentially show how there's a diffusion of responsibility when there's a large group of people acting towards a goal, and that the snowflake doesn't realize it's a part of an avalanche. It just feels like it's a snowflake. You know, you just feel like you're a person doing your job, and meanwhile, you've gotten commerce mixed up somehow or another in science and progress, and you've gotten commerce involved, so it's enforcing its own version of these things before we know the exact results of what could happen. Long-term ingestion, how's it going to affect the other things in the environment, if the parasites that are naturally preying on wheat or whatever the fuck it is that they're making, what happens to them when they're not allowed to breed, when they're not allowed to eat, when they're not allowed to feast on these plants that they've naturally had to protect people from? Like, what about that? What is the backfiring of that? You know, is it bark beetles? You know, what the fuck is it? You know what I mean?
I think on many levels, that analysis that you brought up, that analogy can then be used for so many other things. You know, it's not just about somebody's health now, but now commerce is dictating politics. It becomes the human race, in other words. Companies come into existence not to find out what's the best medicine for people, but what's the cheapest way they can produce something that's going to offset symptoms and then keep them coming back for more. There's no money in the cure. There's only money in the temporary solution, because if you cure it, then what's the point?
And it's pure greed, because there's still an incredible amount of money to be made if they were just in the seed business. Mm. And if they made seeds, and then the farmer could use that plant and grow new seeds, and or get the seeds from it and grow new plants. And it could be a natural thing, you know, and then you couldn't force people into suicide. Like, you've got, like, Indian farmers are committing suicide as a result of being forced into using genetically modified foods and crops and being forced into incredible debt they can't repay. There's something like every 30 seconds an Indian farmer commits suicide.
That's crazy.
It's fucking crazy. I mean, they've attributed, more than 100,000 suicides in India to being connected to genetically modified crops. It's fucking nuts. They get locked into these contracts. They're not making as much money as they think they should be making.
And being the largest democracy in the world, you would think that they would have the ability for people to petition to say this is illegal. But then again, I think the problem with democracy and the problem with having those things is that the commerce that you're talking about is now front and center in terms of everything, in terms of saying, I'm going to sponsor you to be the next candidate or the next president or the next congressman from
bottom. Fucking with life so much when you make something that won't even reproduce. You're fucking with life so much. I just don't think you should be allowed to do that. I think that's where it gets really tricky. When you're fucking with life solely for commerce, like your idea of what it should and shouldn't do, like you're not allowing the cycle of life to continue in a natural fashion. You're making like suicide plants. That's a fascinating thing when we let people do that. Because like, why would you do that? You'd only do that if you're greedy.
Right.
You know?
Like you want to keep them coming back for more.
You're going to put
them
in debt.
It's not about making the plant better or making people eat better or anything. It's just
you're
going
to put them in debt. Right. And you're going to put them in a non-natural cycle. Like, why do they have to, you know, they can't get, none of it can be used. You can't, like, take the seeds and plant and make new plants. Really? Right. The fuck are you doing,
But man? That mirrors everything else. It's like, look, you're getting a car. A car that that puts gas in the air, that pollutes the environment, that makes us required to be in a partnership with some of the most some of the most totalitarian states that exist in the world, practically, that we turn a blind eye to. Now we'll focus on those that don't give us access to their natural resources and don't have bases in their countries, but the ones that don't, those that say, okay, well, now we want to interfere. Now we want a piece of the pie. Now this is commerce talking. This is no longer money. And I think that should be something that at some point we have to accept as a country. And then I think it would be tough for the soldiers to look at that saying, yes, on one hand, it can be said that I'm here to be able to confront, you know, a state that sponsors terrorism. It's a good line. But at the same time, what if all of those soldiers were told at the same time, listen, you're also here because the American economy, and in order to fund this lifestyle that we live, requires you to secure a government that, by our standards, has horrific human rights abuses, by our standards of the same standards and litmus tests we use to criticize these other places, has terrible human rights offenses. But we need their resources. We need them to be a part of us. We need to support this lifestyle. We can't. It's like if we got divorced from reality and all of a sudden, hey, look, bitch, you can't live like you used to live. You're going to have to accept not going to the spa every other day. You're only going to be able to go once a month. Like, no, that's a terrible idea. Kill them all. Let's take what we have from them. And I think that metaphor applies not just to that, but everything now. Everything's about money. It's not about what's good for humanity anymore. Very rarely do you find someone that says, oh, yeah, I'm just doing this because I'm trying to find, you know, what the best thing is for people. It's no.
Right.
How can I make this into, you know, a money-making opportunity, even though it fucks up the entire point and the perspective of what I was trying to do in the first place?
Right. It just becomes about making money, regardless of the consequences of trying to make
that
money.
You have leeway with entertainment to be able to do that.
Yeah, there's got to be a way to reach a happy middle ground, man. You know, just people have to just not be cunts. That's really what it is. Think about what you're doing. For real. Think about what you're doing and say, am I being a cunt? Like, look at it realistically. And if you're being a cunt, stop it. It's really that simple. And if you got some fucking crazy ass business where you're robbing people of their natural resources and going in there with tanks and killing who knows how many fucking civilians, and somehow or another you've passed it off as helping someone's freedom or supporting freedom or making sure we're free, you're a cunt. That's a cunt thing. That's crazy.
And the crazy thing is, it's always on the top level.
And it's always people who never gone to war themselves.
Right,
they're all chicken hawks.
And then it's always somebody who has to suffer and go through being apart from their family. And who really, you know, I have a lot of friends. I have some family in the military. You know what I mean? Shout out to all my peoples out there.
You can say that legit. You can say shout out to all my peoples out there. For me, I have to say it's got to be sort of funny, tongue in cheek.
Shout out to all my peoples out there.
I want to give a shout out to Shark.
I just want people to realize, like, it's not that when we question this country,
not questioning the people that
right. We're not angry at y'all. We're angry at the individuals who are in charge that never take responsibility.
I have a friend who went to Iraq. He was in the Army Reserve for 20 years. Okay, mm-hmm. And he had like less than a month to go, and they sent him to Iraq for a year and a half. They just can do that to you, and then they send him back again. Apparently, they can keep sending you back. Like, even though you, like, do your time in the military, Dick Cheney signed some shit where they made it so they could just bring you back if necessary.
Right.
If you're a trained soldier, the resources to train a new soldier, it's too difficult, apparently. So, too much money. We can't afford that. We got to bring you back. Or whatever the fuck the excuse is. But that's crazy. You've made a person your slave. So, what if that person starts up a business? What if that person out in the legit free world is, you know, got a family, starts up a business? Tough shit. Tough shit. You got to go to the desert. You got to go to the desert for a year, maybe more.
I think at some point, the individuals that were in charge of designing a war, you know, look at people as statistics and not real individual people, because they're not going through it. You know, they're more than happy to let somebody else's child do it. But when you look at them, it's like, even the people that make this genetically modified food, you know what, I would believe a little bit more if I seen your kids drinking that milk. But I know that they're not. Or the individuals that'll say, oh, yeah, you know, I remember there was some story about a girl in the Bush
administration. I think they probably would drink that milk. See, that's not even the problem. I don't think these people are on organic diets.
I think they're charlatans.
I think they're just in commerce. I don't think they're watching their diet that clearly. No,
I think they know. I think when people have millions and millions of dollars, some doctor is going to say, you know what, this is probably not good for you. You probably shouldn't be doing this.
What sort of genetically modified milk would be bad for you? Is there something like that? Is there genetically modified milk?
There's a company that recently has gained a lot of attention called Monsanto, and they've had this big controversy.
Recently, they made DDT.
No.
They made Agent Orange.
Recently, more than ever.
I think they changed their name. Did they change their name?
They've been in the game for a while, but we're talking about recently had so many new investigations open.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, they lost a giant multi-billion-dollar lawsuit to farmers in Brazil.
Right.
Fuck yeah, Brazil. Brazil, fuck yeah, man. They sued the shit out of
beautiful
a
women, a win against Monsanto, jiu-jitsu, and almost all that.
Fucking every weight class has a Brazilian champion. There's more Brazilian champions in MMA because now you got Henan Barão, who just won the interim bantamweight title. And then you got Junior Dos Santos, who's the heavyweight champion. You got Anderson Silva, who's the middleweight champion. And you got, you know, there's tough guys at every weight class from Brazil. Aldo, Jose Aldo is the 145-pound champion. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Somebody told me that's
a lot of fucking weight classes dominated by a Brazilian.
Somebody told me you recently got a black belt in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I know that.
Thank you, sir.
That's a lot of work.
A lot of getting choked in my neck, my friend. A lot of that. I've got a back problem because of it. When you see me doing like that all the time, it's because my back is always fucked up from jiu-jitsu. But it's so fun. I can't help but do it more.
I actually took jiu-jitsu for about 3 or 4 years when I was a kid.
Did you really?
It gave me a lot of real, real life experience. I mean,
yeah, you struggle.
My sensei at the time, you know, he was a Vietnam veteran, a real no nonsense kind of dude. And
it's always in the good plot in a story, a Vietnam veteran returns to the hood to teach karate.
No,
puss!
He was always there. He was always in the hood. Shout out to Sensei Stanley Thompson, and he was a very, very, very positive brother in terms of how we advanced in our lessons, because I remember getting life lessons from the man, not just how to, you know, choke someone or hit someone, but when to and why to, you know what I mean? And the discipline required. Like, I put it on Twitter the other day, one of the things that I always remember he told me, he's like, listen, you know, while you're wasting time with your friends running around, there's somebody that's running and doing push-ups. When you getting high and drunk with your friends, somebody is doing kata. When you are sitting there playing video games, someone is running laps and smashing, you know, a practice dummy. And when this person meets you, they're going to fucking destroy you. And
I took that real problem personally.
And like, Jesus Christ, like, either I'm going to have to commit to this or to that. You know what I mean? But it definitely put those things at the forefront to say, you know what, young brother, you're going to choose your life for yourself. And if this is what you want, you can do it. But at the same time, if you're going to be involved in a situation, just understand what the consequences of that are.
You know, for me, martial arts was the first time I understood the connection of what you put in is what you get out. I didn't understand that connection before. I always like wanted things to happen for me. I didn't really have like a physical thing where it was like so difficult to do that I realized the only way to get good at it is just intense hard work and focus. Everything else in my life, you know, I was like 15 when I finally got into martial arts, like seriously got into it. But everything else in my life, you know, whether it was getting into art or playing other sports, there was no consequences. You know, it's like, so what if your picture didn't look that good? So what if you dropped the ball? You didn't get your ass kicked.
Right.
Once it was someone beats your ass, once it was like, oh, this is the top of the foot. It's either this or kill you. It's either this or kill you. It's either beat your ass or kill you. And guess what? If someone can beat your ass, they can kill you. They can kill you with their fucking hands. If a guy gets your back and he chokes you and you tap, you're essentially admitting that he could have killed you.
Yeah, exactly.
If this was a life or death struggle, he would have put you. He would have kept the choke on. You would have been
got
dead
it,
person.
In other words,
exactly.
Yes.
And that was reality to me. It was like you gotta look at your game. You know, like your fighting game and your life game. You gotta look at it 100% realistically. Look at it objectively. Look at it. Stand outside of it and look at it. And I didn't have to do that until I started fighting. I didn't have to do that until martial arts.
I mean, we definitely had – that was one of the exercises. After we had learned stuff for a certain period of time, we had to show what we learned by fighting our sensei. It wasn't like
– You had to fight him?
We had to fight him. And he was well-trained.
Did he take it easy on you?
No.
He beat your ass?
Of course. I mean, that's just the way it is.
But why is he making – how old was this guy?
No, I'm not talking about beat us up, like leave us on the floor.
Right.
He definitely, obviously,
but you were like a beginning student, right?
We were like, I was maybe like 14, like 13, 14. And I think that it wasn't like I never went home crippled. I never went home like not being able to.
Did you ever see stars? Did you ever crack you and you saw stars?
No. It was more like I definitely got the wind knocked out of me. Like I fell down.
He controlled you.
Right, definitely. Right. It was someone who had experience teaching young children and had taught his son from a very young age. So it was more like it was a control place, and it was more like if in the middle of the fight we did something wrong, we got punished for it because he said, you know better. Mm-hmm. We trained on that for weeks. You know what I mean? You know what to do at that particular time. And now you're just being lazy because you know it hurts to do that block that way. Or it hurts to get down low and then get back up. You know what I mean?
Well, what people don't have to experience in life is that realization, you know, this pain, the bad thing that has happened to you, only happened to you because you didn't put in the work. Only happened to you because you weren't focused enough. Only happened to you because you did something that you shouldn't have done. And you have no choice but to learn what the fuck that was and make sure that doesn't happen again. Because that sucks.
So in other words,
got cracked.
Life lessons. Don't talk shit to Joe on the Fear Factor. He'll put you in the headlock and slap you around like a hoe. And
I only did that to one dude. I only did it because I thought he was going to hit me. He wouldn't get away from my face. I pushed him away from me twice, and I was like, if this guy comes in again, I'm just going to manhandle him.
I mean, you know, some people are really brave when it comes to barking on a woman, but when they deal with a man, it's a whole nother story.
Well, I was, you know, trying to make sure that I wasn't sued, too. Like, I didn't want to do anything. I knew there's 9 cameras on me. It was like, when I had the back of his head, I wanted to make sure that nothing I did was going to get me in trouble. You know?
No, because, I mean, in that position, you could have done so many other things that would have just left him.
I was so angry, too, because I knew this guy had, like, done some shit before on other shows. He, like, attacked some counselor on one show and threw his wife on the ground on another show. I knew he was crazy. So I was like,
I'll say this much. When I was a young man, my father told me, he said, listen, the man who hits his woman is a coward. Like, my father was a very strong man. He said, listen, because he's taking out all the problems on the rest of the world that people are giving him, you know what I mean, for all of this, and taking it out on the person that's supposed to support him instead of him doing that.
Unless,
and I asked my father, I said, what if it's
the woman?
You're
talking about Sean Connery.
what if it's the woman that's giving him all the problems? And I said, yo, at that point, you just get up and leave. That's the worst thing you could do to a woman that's obsessed with trying to ruin your life. Get up and walk out the door and never answer a phone call and never, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you just got to never let it get down that road. When you see it getting down that road to being so crazy you might hit each other, you got to get out. Either change, both of you, come to some mutual agreement, or get out. People don't, you know, they get in these crazy patterns in relationships. That's a big part of the fucking problem. Mm. They get used to being in a situation where they yell and scream at each other. And then when they get into the next relationship, it totally seems normal.
Or they grew up like that.
I grew up like that. Did you grow up like that?
I grew up with both of my parents together. I'm not saying that everything was perfect, but I put it this way. My father was a very, very strict and very, very, like, tough man on us. But I've never seen my dad hit my mother, and I've never seen my father drunk in my life, ever. Like, my dad he taught in a military academy. He was, like, really, really tough on us when we were kids. But at the same time, I can say that I am everything I am because you know, somebody loved me because he took the time to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to take my son who's 12 to the Amazon jungle with me. Oh, you're scared of roaches. Well, what happens when they're all flying the fuck around you? Now deal with it. You know what I mean? Like, deal with the reality of fucking life, dude. This is life. You know, you think you're poor because we live in Harlem?
Right. Let's go to the jungle.
Let's take you to some little real fucked up area in Peru so you can see people that eat like cardboard smashed in with like dog meat. And that's their lunch. And I know it's cardboard. You know it's cardboard, Joe. They know it's cardboard, too. But they're still going to eat it because they're fucking starving. He's like, so I think my pops really just kind of beat the lessons of life into me. You know what I mean?
That's good, man. That's good to have. That's a lot of times kids will resent a father like that. They put so much effort and work into it. But it's tough for a dad, too. You got to know when to let that fucking kid be himself.
Oh, I know.
You
know,
it's hard. Hard to raise children.
I mean, I put it this way. You know, for a long time, me and my father had a very, very negative relationship because of all the crazy stuff I was doing. And then, you know, when I got older, I started to realize that a lot of the things that he was trying to do were things that were very effective. Like, for one time, he kicked me out. Real shit. I hardly ever talk about this, but fuck it, we're here. And he was basically like, no, look, I love you. You know, you're my firstborn son. But, you know, you got drugs in this house. You know, there's something else in there. You know what I mean? And you're endangering the family. I'm not going to let you endanger your mother and your younger sister by running around here being crazy. So you know what you can do? You can get your stuff and you can get the fuck out. And real shit, I left.
How old were you?
Like 16, 15,
you
kind of
have to do that when you have a 15 or 16-year-old that's doing that. You really don't have any options.
And for a long time, Joe, I was kind of resentful until I sat back and I said, damn, as cliche as that sounds, that really must have hurt him more than it hurt me, because I was like, fuck you, and I left, and I walked out. But for him, it must have been like, damn, are you that ignorant? Are you that foolish at that age? Which is why I always believe, like, when I see people that are in those circumstances. This was even before I went to prison. This was before I had any real legal.
What'd you go to prison for?
For assault.
What happened?
I had multiple assault charges. I just used to fight a lot when I was a kid. I thought that would solve everything. You know, I was one of those idiots that was willing to fight to the death against someone who's not my enemy. And the street is full of those fools right now.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, oh, man, this is the life. No, it's not life or death, homie. You're going that way and someone's in your way. You can go around them and it'll be a lot less time.
I'm amazed sometimes at how lippy people will get for no reason.
For no reason.
And people get crazy. Like, they're ready to go. It's almost like they're bluffing. But if you call them on their bluff, they'll go. You know, most of the time people are bluffing. But they're still putting themselves on fucking a yellow light. They're putting themselves in a bad situation.
But, I mean, at the same time, Joe, this is not to excuse my actions in any way, shape, or form. I take responsibility for them. But New York was a very different city. Like, if you grew up in New York in the late 80s, early 90s, you had to have some kind of physical confrontation or somebody was going to treat you like a victim. Yeah. Like, if somebody wanted your hat, it was like, nah, homie, you can't have this hat because you ain't pay for it. Oh, well, give it, and that's where we start.
I lived in Jamaica Plain for a little over a year. Jamaica Plain is the first place we moved to in Boston, and it was a pretty poor and real mixed area, and goddamn, I had to avoid everybody on my block or I would get my ass kicked. Everybody wanted to fight all the time.
All the time.
Kids were always trying to pick fights. They'd always talk shit to you, and you're like, look, I'm going home, leave me alone. And like, they're just constantly talking shit with you, constantly fucking with you, big groups of kids, small groups of kids. And when kids are alone, they're loose like that, especially in poor neighborhoods, so they grow up. Most of the time they're growing up with their fucking parents, or they're not having the best time. That's why they were in a poor neighborhood. So there's probably violence at home, or screaming at home, or chaos at home. And these kids are just fucking loose out on the street. It was... that was like really what really inspired me to get into martial arts. I was like, fuck this, man. This is too dangerous. Everywhere I'm going, someone wants to fight. I don't know how to fucking fight. Like, this is crazy.
And when you got the martial arts, then you could just call them out. You had a big group of people. No, you'd rather not, man.
You know, the martial arts make you just walk left.
No. But right. I mean, when you're backed into that corner, not go find fighting.
I know what you're saying.
Because I'm saying when you're in that place, in that situation, and there's like eight people talking reckless, it'd be like, listen, homie, if you're a real man, why don't we just shoot the five right now?
Shoot the five? What is that?
It means
five
just
knuckles?
Go one-on-one. No, it's only four. Shoot the five. Let's shoot the five.
Never heard of that. Shoot the five fingers?
Or we get the fair one. That's what they call it, the fair one.
The fair one?
The fair one. Yeah, over here on the West Coast, let's catch this fade, homie. You know what I mean? But out there on the East Coast, let's shoot the fair one. Because it's just me and you. All we have is space and opportunity.
I'm amazed at how many dudes are willing to fight that actually don't know how to fight.
That's definitely true.
When I watch
that's
them,
definitely true.
I'm like, that's incredible. You don't even know anything, and you're out there scrapping. Like, this is
They're
ridiculous.
Doing the windmill out there.
They're doing the windmill. They're throwing ridiculous kicks, and they have no training at all. And you're like, oh, my God, this is hilarious. This is a crazy idea. You're willing to do something that's really fucking dangerous and risky, and you're not good at it at all. I watched a fight go down once in front of the Comedy Store, and it was the nuttiest shit I ever saw in my life. I saw a guy completely lose his ability to figure out what he was doing. Like, he was so freaked out that he was in a fight with this guy. It was a white guy and a black guy. And the white guy is literally frozen in fear and flailing his arms like this. I mean, he had just was going like this, like waiting to get hit. And a fucking bus moved in front of me. And then as the bus moved by, the dude was laid out, stiff-legged, unconscious.
Jesus.
And the black dudes were already running.
Happy birthday, Mitzi.
Yeah, happy birthday, Mitzi. Is it really her birthday?
Yeah.
Well, how old is she now? Well, we don't say. A lady doesn't tell.
We're giving shout-outs?
Well, to Mitzi, sure.
To Mitzi. Shout to Mitzi. Shout to my people's Anil Melwani watching from the East Coast. Snow the Product and her brother. You know what I mean? I want to send a shout-out to the whole Rebel Arms, the whole squad that's watching right now, everybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, don't go fighting in the street, even if you do know what you're doing. Don't go doing that.
That's the last option.
People got to learn how to chill.
Right.
That's the hard part, right? How the fuck does this world evolve if we're still involved in all the wars and all the craziness and all that? How the fuck do we get past this? The more I look at the life that we see on TV every day and the tragedies that we see in the news and the horrific things that are going on all over the world, the more I go, there's got to be a way that collectively we can figure out how to stop most of this shit. Most of this shit that I'm looking at is people doing shit to other people. We collectively stop that. It's almost like because we're not dealing with UFOs or asteroids or anything nutty outside of the Earth, all of our conflicts are being caused by people doing cunty shit to other people. Like, literally, the whole world's problem is the whole world. The people in the world's problem is the people. It seems like that should be the easiest thing to solve. That should be the easiest thing to figure out how to get past. It's like we're like the crazy person that never learns from their crazy actions. Just keeps doing the same stupid shit over and over and over again.
Or the crazy person that doesn't realize they're crazy. Like most crazy people don't seem to get. I think what we're talking about here is really the evolution and the de-evolution of mankind. Because we have... You know,
we're so close.
We have the ability to be on other planets almost. You know what I mean? We have the ability to create these lasers, these incredible communication devices, these incredible travel
cell
devices.
Cell phones, 4G.
But we have not cured greed. We haven't cured racism. We haven't cured, you know what I mean, jealousy, anger, hatred. We're ruled by these things, and people that can control them and know how those function within the human mind have more of an ability to control.
Well, what's interesting is that when things get created, say something spectacular, something destructive, the people that are creating that thing, then that technology gets put into the hands of people that did not create it. They just have it now.
Right.
And that is always a problem. When someone wields something of incredible power and they didn't even create it, you know, you just got it from. So, do you understand the whole process behind it? If you are the type of person that can create that, are you the type of person that would be willing to unleash it on people? I think you'd be more willing to unleash it if you bought it. You know, if you got it from somebody else. It's just we have the ability to do shit that we don't have the moral evolution to cope with. We have the ability to wipe out like giant sections of the world in like real quick blasts. And we somehow or another feel like, you know, because we do it a little bit more precisely, like in Iraq, like that's a little bit more precisely. You send actual troops in there instead of just dusting the whole area. It's still a massive amount of casualties.
And they love to use the same result. The catchphrase, collateral damage. You know, which I think is one of the worst excuses for murder in the world.
It's crazy. And the sad part is
the people who catch the blame are always the people on the bottom, the enlisted men. Like, even in Abu Ghraib, when I saw that, I was like, oh, okay, watch. All the soldiers are going to get some kind of shit to them, but the people, the commanders, the officers in charge, the people who decided the policy at DOD, the individuals who were at the administration who said, yeah, this is fine, do what you need to do to get this, those people that gave free range, they always escape. They always seem to have their little exit in the back door, while the individuals who actually did it and yet bear no responsibility for being told to do it or being told this is what we're going to do or this is in the
middle. Is that what happened in Abu Ghraib? I thought it was just the soldiers deciding to be fuckheads and take pictures with bodies and
I'm not going to say that isn't part of what happened, but I believe in all of these situations that there is some kind of culture within the society that says, you know what, if you get caught doing this, you're going to do the time for this as opposed to whoever is on the top for it.
It's because always
you have the benefits
crazy.
Of being here.
It's always crazy when a stranger is your enemy. Okay, that doesn't make any sense. If a stranger is your enemy, one of two, someone's doing something fucked up. Mm-hmm. It's either you or it's him, and you got to figure out who it is. And if you're in his town and you're carrying a gun, then it's you. You're not supposed to be there. Like, you just, the only way you
looking
would
for Al Qaeda in a country that don't have
it's just fucking crazy. The only way you would have a stranger that's your enemy is if we were in a place where you couldn't communicate. Well, we're not in that place anymore. We're in a totally different world. This isn't the world of 10,000 years ago when we show up on a fucking wooden boat. We hit the beach and this dude shooting arrows at us. We got to kick some ass. This is a totally different world we're living in now. It doesn't make any sense.
But has humanity evolved naturally? In other words, if we took somebody from now and supplanted them into that era, would they simply act the same? Or if we took somebody from that era and put them in here now, wouldn't the results simply be the same?
I don't know. I would like to think that we've evolved a little bit, or a larger percentage of us have evolved a little bit because of the internet, because of people's abilities to express themselves in a way that, you know, Monsanto didn't really have to hear from the regular people in the 1960s when they were making Agent Orange. They didn't have to hear, you know, there was a protest in the news, and if there's not a bunch of people carrying signs, you're not getting anything from the people, you know what I mean? It's not like today when people on Twitter would go fucking crazy and any big story that happens, any big corruption story,
going to boycott and it actually has serious consequences.
Yeah, and then
because people
be like,
say, you know what, I'm
going to
contact this person and you're going to have economic consequences by the end of the day, which, by the way, is all that they listen to.
Well, by the way, today, Chick-fil-A, Roseanne Barr went off on Chick-fil-A because the governor of Massachusetts, God bless his soul, was talking about how Chick-fil-A is not welcome in Boston because Chick-fil-A has this it was something to do with their idea. They have a very religious company apparently, and it has something to do with their ideas. Chick-fil-A, they won't even serve on Sunday.
Yeah, they're closed on Sunday.
They're closed every Sunday. They lose millions of dollars every year because of that. But that's just the way it is. If their fucking sandwiches are delicious, you know. I mean, the guy may be nutty with Jesus, but he makes a hell of a fucking chicken sandwich. Right. But apparently,
He bought a good recipe once upon a time.
Could be, but yeah, I don't know what it is. But whatever it was. Whatever the statements from Chick-fil-A were addressed by the mayor of Boston, I think it was, right? Was it the mayor of Boston or the governor of Massachusetts?
I didn't know this.
Either one, I haven't lived there in a long time. I don't know who's running shit. But whoever's running shit essentially said that they weren't welcome. You know, that they don't observe same-sex marriages. I don't know what the fuck else it was, you know, whatever statements. It's kind of funny because people should be allowed to think whatever the fuck they want to think, and who cares? It's just a chicken sandwich place. You know, as long as they're not actively victimizing anybody, they can have their nutty beliefs. You know, I think you're allowed to have your nutty beliefs. Even if your nutty beliefs don't jive with mine, you're allowed to have them. You know,
As long as they're not affecting or hurting.
Yeah.
As long as they're not hurting people.
Yeah, I don't know what the
But then again, maybe
was.
Chick-fil-A is part of this big super PAC donors that say we're going to give money to try and affect this legislation, then it becomes different. Then your opinion is not your opinion. Then you're starting to use your money that you get from all of the things that you have to bolster this opinion and make people believe that your opinion is a fact rather than just your fucking opinion. You know
what
I mean?
That gets tricky, right?
Then
it gets
say,
tricky
oh,
when
we're
going to
decide.
Profit.
Right.
Gets tricky when you get profit off distributing your opinion. You know, and getting people to go along with it.
Well, Joe, this is kind of what you and me do. We profit by distributing our opinion on stuff.
Sure, but we don't have any influence on the ability to, you know, control countries. We're very simple. Right. Come to a comedy show influence. You know, very different. Very different.
I heard they're suing Batman.
Yeah, Warner Brothers. Yeah, the people involved in the...
Because...
You know, I don't want to say anything bad about those poor fucking people, but someone apparently had the idea that they can make some money, it looks like. They're suing them for promoting violence, which is ridiculous, because this was the third movie in a Batman trilogy. Right. I mean, you knew exactly what it is. The fucking whole movie is about a crime fighter. And they were saying also that because of the movie, the guy came in a costume. They thought he was a part of the movie, and it was, you know, right. they
But isn't that more that. The theater's responsibility because they were supposed to close that?
Who knows, man? Who the fuck knows? Look, somebody wants to kill you. They're
gonna do a full investigation. But the sad thing is now, you know, people want to know everything. It's just I see the difference in between the way people are treated, and I think it's kind of hard to ignore. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's no specific cause right now that they have of his actions. However, I know what it would be if he had been like, you know, he had like a Muslim last name. It'd be like automatically he must be a terrorist, and this what he must. He killed military personnel.
Right.
He must be a terrorist. If he was,
he's actually scarier. He's right. scarier than someone that's a part of some sort of a religious ideology. He's
or if he was Latino, they'd be like,
PhD student.
He's an illegal immigrant. Yeah. Get him out of here. Or a black guy, he's a gang member. Rather than just being like, hey. And I saw that circulating on the internet, and I wonder how real that could potentially be. Even to the fact of him being alive. If he was of, you know, a complexion that can't make the connection, would he be walking in this? I mean, would they want to take him alive? Would they just be like, look, just pop him. We don't need somebody like this run through the media. Just get rid of him.
Well, I think when you get to a situation like that, there's too many cameras on you. You know, the reason why they didn't kill that guy, or they might have killed that guy back in the day, was that there's too many people with cameras on you, and you can get sued for that. You know, you can get sued. If someone has a cell phone camera and you don't know about it, you can't just murder the guy right there. You're fucked, because if you do that, they'll put you in jail for murder.
Unless you're a cop and you're in the Bay Area. Because he shot that kid.
Well, he fucked up
on camera.
He's an idiot. He thought that was his taser. That stupid fuck.
You really think that's true?
I don't know, but a taser is a fucking device with a trigger. And if you're an idiot, if you're a fucking idiot and you're freaking out because you're in the middle of a physical confrontation with someone, and you accidentally pull out your gun instead of your taser, I mean, I can't think that he thought it would be okay to shoot that guy like that. That doesn't even make any sense. It seemed more like a fucking moron move, because the guy was already lying down on the ground. He was resisting. Right. You wouldn't shoot him once you already have him down on the ground.
Well,
you know what I mean? He was trying to tase that dude.
People do things like that all the time that they don't think they're going to have consequences for.
Well, if that's the case, he's a psychopath, because it didn't make any sense that he shot him.
Well, I mean,
it made sense, though.
Didn't he dye his hair like the nigga who killed
You mean the new? Okay, we're talking about two separate things now.
No. He did dye his hair too.
The new guy, the cop dyed his hair. The cop that shot that kid in the subway.
Yeah, he dyed his hair, and he went to they caught him somewhere else.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. You mean the cop fled?
Yeah, he bounced for a little while.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Go
at
look
all.
It up. Look it up. Everybody look it up online.
I believe you. I didn't know that. Maybe he just thought he was going to jail for life. He just fucked up and he panicked. Who knows?
But he got a slap on the wrist. And I always joke about it. I joke about it.
How long did he get?
Nothing. Hardly anything, probably.
Well, I think it probably was a mistake. I don't know. But it's a terrible mistake.
The guy, the kid, Oscar Grant, I mean, I can't even imagine how many more people ended up like him within that era where there was, like you said, no cameras. When there was no one back in the day. Man. You know, how many people have been the victim of that?
Yeah, I know a lot of cops, man. They see one of the problems is you're a cop, you see a lot of shit. You see a lot of shit all the time, and you lose your patience. Right. You lose your patience, and you become more attuned to the cunts of the world than you would like to be. And you don't want to hear any fucking bullshit anymore. It's a very, very fucking tricky job to maintain your humanity.
My question is this now.
You're always seeing the worst in people.
Being that I know that there are people out there who really do risk their lives, like if someone's house is getting robbed or...
Well, how about this guy? This guy in Denver, man. Someone had to go in there and stop him. You know, this isn't something that the community could just rally together. No one had guns.
But my question is, the police that break the law,
mm-hmm.
should they be held more accountable because they know the law that much better? Like, in other words, if you kill someone...
I don't think it ever...
Or should you get time minimized? For example, there's a case in New York where a guy, he got like a year probation or something, or it was like one year in jail or something, because he killed a guy while he was drunk driving.
Uh-huh.
And he's his family is apparently connected with the NYPD or something like that. But this is my question, though. If you're a cop, shouldn't you be held accountable to the law even more so? Because you knew it was wrong to be drunk and driving. You arrested people probably 100 times for doing the same thing.
I don't think that it's ever been shown that to put people in a situation where it's whatever they're doing that's wrong has more of a consequence. I don't think that's ever been shown to have any effect on their actions. I think people do shit because they think they're going to get away with it. They don't do shit because they measure the consequence and go, all right, I might do a year in jail. Fuck it, let's ride. They don't do it like that. It's more of an impulsive sort of a thing when people make mistakes like
that.
But
if people know, listen, there's no way that I'm really going to catch that much heat for this because who the fuck cares?
You know
what I mean? If I'm drunk and somebody pulls me over and we both play for the same team, you're going to bring me in? You know what's going to happen to you after that? Really?
What's really crazy is how many cops turned out to be corrupt back in the days before the internet. I mean, I think it's very difficult to be corrupt today, but I think back in the day it was probably pretty fucking easy.
I think it's slightly less difficult to be corrupt. I mean, I think you can if there's money in it for you, you know, and I think there's levels of corruption. There's harmful levels, and then there's simple stuff like, you know what? I'll fix your tickets for you. You know, we're good friends.
Right.
That's corruption, whether or not it's bad and people's kids are dying.
Someone shouldn't have the ability to do that.
They say, oh, you know what? You're connected with me. I'll give you the card. When you have a problem, you call me and I take care of it.
Right.
I know people that benefit from that. I know people that have been in situations where they may not be 100% right and they have a specific card or something like that. And I'm not denigrating this thing. I'm just saying that at some point, you know, are you more responsible for your corruption because you know the law 10 times better?
And you're enforcing it. That's your
job. And you're enforcing it. In other words, if you get caught for murder and then you're off all of a sudden in 5 years, that's only because you knew the law better and then you still broke it?
Well,
or you're selling drugs to people?
Like I said, I don't think that you make people more responsible and you're going to change anything. You might make people feel better because you're punishing them more, but I don't think you're necessarily going to change behavior by offering a bigger consequence. I think the only way to change behavior is to change thinking. And what I try to tell people is, and it sounds ridiculous, but this is something that came to me on a boat once, is that you got to treat everybody as if it's you living another life. If we could all do that, if we could all picture any person, regardless of what the fuck they're going through in your life, think about what it would be like to live that person's life from birth to death with their situation, their economic situation, their biological situation, their life experiences. Would you be any different than that person if you were that man, if you were that woman? Would you be any different? Are you them? You know, if that person was born you, would they be you? And are we all the same like that? And is that what life really is all about? Is figuring out that each one of us is exactly the same. We're just living through a different biological circumstance. And the more you can treat everyone you meet like they're you living another life, the happier you'll be. And that's the only way we're ever going to sort this thing out. Is everyone has to do things based on that ideal. Everyone, whether it's business or personal shit, whatever you do, you always have to think that this person that you're dealing with is you living another life. And you can't let them boss you around, can't let them talk shit to you, can't let them fuck up your life. You know, you do your best to keep them on track, but your ethic and your resolve and your intent should always be to treat them as if it was you living a whole nother
unless
life.
Unless you're somebody who hates yourself, and then that's just...
Well, you got to get your shit together, son. That's a whole nother trip.
Then you start fucking people up like, I fucking hate you.
Well, they just closed down all these medical marijuana dispensaries in California, or they just sent a letter in Los Angeles. Los Angeles has decided to step in their infinite wisdom and shut down the only businesses that are regularly making money in all of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Like, so stupid. It's well, fucking... Dummies.
The first American flag was made out of hemp.
Yeah.
Real shit.
When the drafts of the Declaration of Independence was written on hemp. I mean, who cares about all that stuff? The idea
I can't. You know why?
I do.
You know why? Because I think it takes the story back and it shows us. Listen, people made their clothes out of this. People did everything. Look.
Right, but that's not even the psychoactive stuff.
We live in a culture now where the smoke that causes cancer is legal and the smoke that cures cancer is illegal.
Yeah,
and that's fucking mind-boggling to me.
It doesn't necessarily cure cancer, but it certainly reduces
tumors. Right, well, I'm just saying that...
By the way, Tommy Chong, for all the people that listen to the podcast, Tommy Chong is 99% cancer-free now.
Holy shit.
He just started...
God bless him.
He's been doing this hemp oil stuff, And it's this Rick Simpson is the guy who invented this hemp oil. Apparently, it's this really potent form of the oil from cannabis, and it puts you on the fucking moon, and in the process, it shrinks tumors. Yeah, so congratulations to our friend Tommy Chong. That's awesome news.
Congratulations.
And it's amazing that this guy did it with no chemotherapy. He did it with holistic medicine, meaning vitamins and food, and not meaning like anything crazy like sucking on crystals, making om noises. Holistic meaning treating the body as a whole, giving it nutrients, giving, you know, he does what I do every morning. He has a kale shake, you know, and which is a lot of people have been doing this. And if you're down for health and vitality, man, there's very few things in life better than a really fucking thick, heavy, nutrient dense vegetable shake in the morning. And it does not taste good. I'm not gonna fucking lie to you. I chew this shit down every day, and every day I think about finding a way to pussy out of this. Like, oh man, just have some bacon and eggs. Fuck this. But I don't. I drink this goddamn awful concoction. I was feeling like a little bit sick when I came back from Canada the other day. A lot of traveling and shit. Mm. I drank this shit one day. By the end of the day, I felt great. That's never happened. Every time I get a cold, by the end of the day, I'm ready to go to sleep. I'm fighting this off. I got to take a hot bath the next day. You know, it takes like a day to fight off a cold. By the end of the day, it was done. Because I'm eating nutrient-dense shit, bitches. Okay? I go crazy with it. My latest thing, I add coconut oil to it because Rob Wolf, who will be on tomorrow, the author of The Paleo Diet, said that in order for you to get maximum absorption of the vitamins from plants, you should have them with some fat. The way the human body works, you should have a little bit of fat. So I started adding coconut oil to that shit, son. And coconut oil has been known to help people who have Alzheimer's disease. There's some sort of a connection between Alzheimer's disease and diabetes, that it's almost like a sort of a cousin of diabetes for the brain or something like that. Mm. And they're having positive results giving Alzheimer's patients coconut oil. Coconut is a wonderful fucking plant. What an amazing resource coconuts are. It tastes delicious. You can eat the meat of it. You drink it. There's oil in it. It's great for you. You can't think anything better for rehydrating than coconut milk. The water from coconuts is the shit.
Coconut C2O, butter. Bitches.
Is there coconut butter?
No, coconut butter is good.
My favorite candy bar of all time is Almond Joy because it has coconut in it. Mm. Almond Joy. Is the almonds alone good enough? Nope. Need some coconut to back that shit up. You know, that's what it is. Mars? Yeah. Mars is even better than... I prefer Mars over Almond Joy, but it's tough to just find Mars.
Damn, man.
You know what I found out last night, Joe? You're going to freak out about this.
I bet I won't.
Down the street, maybe a mile that way, there's a Roscoe Chicken and Biscuits or whatever.
Waffles, yeah.
Waffles.
Yeah, there's one in Pasadena.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you didn't know that?
No.
Dude, we should
open,
totally...
They open one in Inglewood, too.
Yeah?
Whenever we do Rock the Bells, we're going to do a tour in August. I'm going to be back here on the West Coast, and I got a big show in San Bernardino. And then I have one on San Diego, Ventura, San Luis Obispo, Fresno, and all that. But whenever all the dudes come here, that's the first thing they say.
Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles.
Roscoe's, man.
Yeah, it's tough to beat that combination. They nailed it, man. Yeah, yeah. And that chicken is the best fucking fried chicken you will ever have. It's very not just good. It's fried chicken or just waffles. The waffles are perfect. They're goddamn American waffles. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, not this Belgian bullshit. These big, fat, fluffy fucking loaves of bread that you're soaking up the syrup with. No, it's a goddamn flat waffle, an American waffle. With some badass fried chicken. You can't fuck with Roscoe's.
Yeah.
They're too good.
I like it.
Especially with hot sauce, that chicken with hot sauce. Oh,
I always say, listen, if they opened one in New York, they would make a killing.
Yeah, a killing. Would? They would crush it. They would crush it. There would be lines out the door every day. Same with In-N-Out, man. If In-N-Out got to New York, you know, there's some people on the West Coast that have figured some shit out. Chicken and waffles and an In-N-Out burger.
And the cannabis dispensaries.
That too. Yeah, but meanwhile, these cunts are closing them here. It's so crazy. It's like, if Mitt Romney gets in office.
They're in court for this, or they started the proceedings?
I don't know. Right, they made a statement yesterday.
They ruled. All.
Somebody's got to sue.
Yeah,
the city council ruled, right? Is that what it was?
Yeah, but what I don't understand is how they can just do that, because a lot of these people are families, and this is their family business now, and they've invested so much time and money, and they were allowed.
They're doing it because they have power that they didn't earn. They don't deserve it. They're dumb cunts. That's why they're doing it. Yeah. They're idiots. The idea that it's hurting anybody is preposterous. So the idea that you're protecting people from anything is ridiculous. What are you doing? What are you doing that's good for the common welfare? What are you doing that's good for the community? It's what you're doing is absolutely illogical and based on a false pretense, and that is that there's something wrong with taking cannabis. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with it health-wise. There's nothing wrong with it. And there's no one's getting victimized by it. There's no addictive properties to it. I don't give a fuck what Dr. Drew says. Marijuana is not physically addictive. And if you get addicted to pot, you could get addicted to anything.
Who said that?
Dr. Drew. You could get addicted to beating off. You can get addicted to playing with your eyelids. There's people that are addicted to plucking hairs out of their arms, okay? That doesn't mean that plucking hairs out of your arms should be illegal. It's stupid. These people are broken bitches.
This is the other thing. I can't drive a car when I'm drunk. I wouldn't try. But I could definitely drive very safely.
When you're high.
If I'm blazed up.
Yeah.
There's certain people things are you silly. Could do. There's certain things you can do. You know what I mean? And there are certain things you just cannot.
Well, I don't like to drive high, but I could do it if I had to. I do jiu-jitsu high all day. I do it all the time. Mm-hmm. It's no problem. I kickbox high. It feels natural to me. It doesn't bother me. I don't like learning new techniques when I'm high. I like training. I like if rolling or hitting the mitts or something like that. I like doing that when I'm high. But if I was like, if someone's trying to teach me some new way to throw a kick or someone, then I wouldn't want to do it high. You know, then I want to have all my faculties. I don't want to be distracted. But when you know what you're there to do, you get high. You just get into that groove. There's no physical repercussions of it. I'd have no slowing in my reflexes or movements.
Just to clarify, I'm not advising that people get high and drive.
I'm advising that people get high and do jiu-jitsu. I am advising
I'm not advising people get high and drive, but if you want to get high and do jiu-jitsu or do something that...
I swear to God, it knocks my jiu-jitsu up a notch.
Yeah?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe so. You know, I think...
With the delayed reaction time?
There's no delayed reaction time. That's what's silly. You know, people, first of all, people are getting that indica weed. And that indica weed is all over the East Coast. Very hard for you guys to get sativa because you guys aren't in a legal environment. In California, it's legal, so they figured out a way to grow the more psychoactively potent strains of sativa, like Trainwreck, and, you know, there's a Green Crack, and there's the one called Sage that we're smoking right now. These things are fucking Carl Sagan weed, man. This is Cosmos type shit. This is not the kind of weed that makes you like sink into the couch. And the kind of weed that you get on the East Coast.
We don't all get don't say that. We don't all get bad weed.
It's not bad weed, bro. I like that shit.
We get West Coast weed out there.
But no, I'm not even saying that. West Coast weed, there's a lot of great West Coast indica. What I'm saying is you don't get too much sativa. There's and some. The indica is great. Some. You have some? Yeah. It's harder to get.
Harder to
know for sure that the guy you're selling it, who's selling to you is legit. Whereas I can go to a dispensary, you know, and just walk into a place and they have the exact strain. Still can where I live, dude. I don't live in LA.
It takes the violence out of it. We're taking the violence out of the drug trade by doing that.
They're taking the creepy people out of it.
We're putting tax on something. You're making money.
It's
an American pastime. Half the founding fathers were high. They were probably high when they were writing the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution.
Yeah, I hope they were. It would have been a better piece of literature.
That's probably why
it's so good. They were high as fuck when they wrote.
They were high as shit, like, yo, what should we do? What should we do? Yeah. And then, like, the assholes among them were like, hey, let's put in all men should be free, and then let's just have slavery instead. Like, fuck it.
Well,
man.
It's amazing that we haven't, like, written a new one. Like, how about we get together and decide, like, as a fucking race, what's the best thing we could do for the race? And we should have all of our guidelines and everything agreed upon by, you know, the intelligent people of the world. We should have it not based on, you know, who's in power and who's in control and can they manipulate that and make money. It should really... All of our rules or how society is done should be for the betterment of improving our society. But it's not. It's not because there's cunts in power. They're not sacrificing themselves and their own pleasure and their own profit in order to help you and aid you. They gotta look at it as if everybody is you living another life.
Or we can teach them
to do that.
Or even in terms of getting a profit. Nowadays, what is that? It's a digital salary. It's a bunch of numbers in a computer.
Or I need a sack of gold and a fucking deer's balls. A deer ball sack with gold coins in it, you motherfucker.
I told niggas when I was coming here, I was like, yo, man, I hope that this motherfucker don't do nothing crazy.
Like what?
No, pull out no elk penis, crazy fear factor shit.
Silly,
no
silly,
fear
silly.
Factor ass shit. These
people always say that. You got any bugs on you?
Hey, Mortal, who do you think killed Biggie?
Oh, man, that's crazy.
How dare you, Brian?
Why?
I ask everyone. Stir up an East Coast, West Coast.
No. You know what's funny? I have a lot of support on the East Coast because that's where I'm from. But this is probably one of the places in L.A. where I could do a bigger show than I could in New York. I think it's just because New York is like 10 cities put together and L.A. is like 20 cities put
together. Also they probably appreciate you more where you're not at all the time. You know, that's just natural. You know, if you're used to doing shows in New York, everybody's like, oh, Immortal Technique, he's here all the time.
He's here all the time.
But when you get out to L.A., they're like, oh, shit, he's here.
But I have a lot of family. I'm always out here.
You've become notorious and famous, and everything you've achieved is pretty much through the internet.
A lot of it, yeah, but I think in the very beginning, it had to do with me going to specific places and not just playing the big towns, but playing all the small places around it.
So you think you built it up like a sort of a grassroots thing, and then it picked up through the internet.
I learned this business from not only from people who were involved in it, but also like in terms of performers. Mm-hmm. But I also learned a business from a lot of old school Italian and Jewish gangsters that ran the game back in the day and were like, hey, listen, let me just break it down for you, young brother. Like, in the 1930s...
Was that the Jewish guy talking to you like that?
It could have been... Hey,
old Jewish
gangster. Let me break this fucking down for you.
That would bother you. That would bother the shit out of me.
We had to kill Biggie for a reason.
No.
If an old Jewish dude said young brother, I'm like, oh, you're trying to rip me off, son. What's going on here?
They were very, very... And these are friends of the family, so it's not like they're sitting here playing a game with me. They're just being very honest. They're like, look, in the 1930s and 40s, people who are African-American didn't have the opportunity to petition in court. I mean, you didn't even have civil rights. Right. So when you're dealing with people who are trying to rob you and jerk you in terms of these promoters, they needed some muscle for their hustle. So it's different for them to be like, hey, man, can I have my money, please? Or it like, right, you owe Louis Armstrong like $60,000 and you're going to give me and Avi over here an extra 10 for coming down here and having to fuck you up, or you're not going to have any legs in a little while. Who the fuck are you going
to
call? The cops?
That's what they used to have to do in the music business. It was about getting money from the people that owned the theaters.
No, getting money from individuals, shaking people down, getting every last dollar that they could. That's why the business is run like a hustle. It's run on some gangster shit. If you look at the contract, for example, the one that used to be prevalent rather than the 360 deal, you have a point system where you're basically given like, you know, 10, 15 points, which technically means you get 10 cents off of every dollar that comes in.
So 10 points is a percent, essentially.
The stuff you pay back in terms of the loan doesn't come out of the gross.
It doesn't even come out of the net.
It comes out of that 10%. It's the most gangster shit in the world. It's a way that you keep people in perpetual servitude.
Out of that 10% comes all of the travel
marketing,
expenses.
Traveling, marketing, pressing
up. That's ridiculous.
The amount of studio time.
Not evenly distributed
between
everybody.
Right, exactly.
Only goes to the artist.
So I think to me, it wasn't just that, but they also told me, listen, if you want to survive and have longevity in this game, then do it the old school rock and roll way. Forget this mixtape craze that was hitting during the mid-2000s. They said what you need to do is tour nonstop, go everywhere, never turn down a show. So,
where did you tour? Where'd you start this off? Where'd you like start doing rap?
I mean, I could rhyme ever since I was about like 9 years old, but I didn't really take it seriously. Like in terms of trying to put things together,
I could rhyme when I was five. I did some Dr. Seuss type shit.
I could put some real. No, but when I was young, I try to write like little songs or little verses. And then I think when I got out of prison, I decided, you know what? I'm gonna take all these songs that I wrote while I was incarcerated, and I'm gonna really record them, and I'm gonna put them down. I'm gonna find instrumentals, and I went about it, and I started winning a lot of these MC battles. They still have them on now. They have like some companies that run them, Smack, and
you know what's funny, man? When dudes lose their head and punch the other guy. Have you seen some of that shit?
I know a lot of people that have done things like that. Damn. But We shun those things in New York now.
Because it's ridiculous.
We built a strong empire.
You're a weak bitch. If you sucker punch a guy while a guy's going off on you, you're a weak bitch.
Or if somebody's getting in your face, like literally like touching your face, you've crossed the line, homie.
Right. That's true, but there is some shit that someone could say that they deserve to get cracked. Like if someone's talking shit about your mother or, you know, or especially someone in your
family that has
died.
But this is the whole point. In the battle scene now, there's nothing that's off limits.
Yeah, but you should be. No, and the dude's going to punch you. He talks like his mom dies, and he talks some shit about his mom.
Joe, this is the difference between how it is now and how it was back in the day. When I was around still doing these battles in the late 90s, early 2000s, and really only in the early 2000s is it on video. All the other stuff was just street battles.
Mm-hmm.
If you said something in a battle, you had to be prepared to back it up afterwards. Whereas right. now, you could say, I'm going to murder you, I'm going to kick your ass. And then after the battle, people shake hands and no mention of what's actually transpired.
So in the old days, it was more real.
Yes.
It was more like, you're going to murder someone, they might fucking shoot you when you're walking in your car.
If we were all here in a big cypher back in like 1997 or something, and one of us, and someone tried to jump in the cypher, somebody would test that person. Like, what the fuck are you doing here? And start battling them. And whether or not they were successful or even held their own in the battle, they could stay in the cypher. It was more exclusive. People booed the shit out of you before and were not scared to. Whereas now they're like, oh, yeah, well, he tried. You know, no. Fuck you. Get off. State New York was just the worst.
Have you ever heard of Pete Spratt? Do you know who Pete Spratt is?
That name is familiar.
He's a badass rapper who's also a badass mixed martial arts fighter.
Oh yeah,
yeah. He fought in the UFC a few times. He's fought in MFC, fought in a bunch of different organizations. But he's a sick Muay Thai fighter. He's just a badass kickboxer. Very, very dangerous dude. But he's also a rapper. He's like
the rapper.
Yeah. He's like the last dude that you want to talk shit to in a fucking rap battle is Pete right. Spratt. That motherfucker will leg kick you into oblivion.
I found our old rap battle of you.
Of you? Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You ever seen her at your high school science fair? Only way you win this battle is if I let you. You look like Captain Crunch's
that's for sure.
Now, when you're doing this, is all like ad-libbing?
Yeah, it's pretty much freestyling. You know what I mean?
You have shit that you like go-to things?
I think every rapper has an emergency line. But back in the day, it really was really, really like very spontaneous. It was off the top of the head. As they refer to it, freestyling off the top of the head. I think, and then I think at some point nowadays, all the battle rap that we see now, Joe, is all very much choreographed. Like, in other words, you and I, it's run more the way the UFC would be, where you and I know our opponent months ahead of time. We train for his style. I see you and I say, you know what? His style is to find angles and personal lines about people. I know what his weaknesses are. I need to find it. Whereas back in the day, you would come in a room and the wall would just be wall-to-wall MCs, and they would call two people to come in the middle that didn't even know each other. And then, like you said before, you at war with a stranger. I don't know you. It's just they tell you where you're from.
I could settle battle rapping in 10 minutes. Settle it all. Jiu-jitsu. Stop. Shut your mouth.
I thought you were going to say
yeah, but
mushrooms.
Lay down some mats. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, but at the
get
same
your
time.
Get your pair of shorts. Put a t-shirt on. Ready? Try to kill each other. Shut up.
But it's a war. But that's the whole point. It's a war. It's a war of words. You know what I mean?
It's a war of insults.
It's a war of personal insults. At some point, I think if you don't make the insults clever and there's no technique to them
right.
and there's no metaphor, then it becomes anything. Because
right.
you and anybody else could have a slugfest in the street, and eventually somebody's going to win. But right. if there's no technique, there's no.
But you know what? You
no
could
style
have that
to
just
it
in your raps. Period. Isn't it better to do that than to do it in some sort of a fucking silly battle situation where you're insulting each other?
I think to me, battling is something that refined, and the way that I did rap, and just to clarify, there's a big difference between the way it was and the way it is now, Joe. The way it was that the winner got to come back and perform at the next one.
So oh, really you had so to there win, was something to it.
You had to win two battles. The first one was against your opponents, and there would be several in the same night. You would have a pyramid.
And then you got to come back
and
perform a rap.
Your songs and music. So ooh. You had to prove yourself twice. The first time was against the other
That's
opponents.
A great idea.
And the other one was against the crowd. And nowadays, what's been taken out of it, Joe, is that advancement of somebody's career. That work that puts in that says, you know what? Not only did you come here and prove yourself in terms of your insulting ability, but now I have to see, are you really, can you really write songs?
Right.
Is all you can do battle? Because right. if that's all you can do, then step to the left, motherfucker. So someone that really has an opportunity to shine and worked on music can be in this position and show that to the crowd.
There are dudes that only have like a battle rap game. They don't have like a rap
right.
game.
I mean, I threw a personal battle, which there were two winners. There was a guy called Nestle and A-Class. Big shout out to them. And what their battle was for the opportunity, and they're going to have it now, to open up for a short tour that I'm going to do, like a spot day tour for the Middle Passage. So in that respect, yeah, they have to win a battle against one another. And then the prize is I have to now prove myself in front of this audience. I have to show them my work, and I have to show them that I'm more than just a battle rapper. That's the biggest battle for me, for any battle rapper to win.
To actually become a real rapper.
Right, to prove, you know what, I'm more than just a funny guy who can come up with insults. Similar to the way comedians struggle to get a show, or they struggle to get a tour.
Well, the actual correlation is comedians that work the crowd.
Right.
Comedians that work the crowd versus comedians that tell jokes. Because you could, there's some guys that, there's an art to making spontaneous humor up, and where are you from, sir, and, you know, fucking around with people in the crowd. There's an art to that. But there's a lot of dudes that get good at that, and they can never turn it into a bit. They can never just go up there and, without interacting with people, say, this is my thoughts on things, and have it be funny. They just can't do it. They don't develop that skill.
So they just steal material from
No, that's another thing. But there's we know a dude that's a funny guy, and he doesn't do any real comedy. He just talks to people. If he can't talk... But the crazy thing is, you can't do that if you're doing 2,000 people and you're, you know, 10 feet in the air and they're way down at the bottom. You got to have some bits.
And that's exact. I think that analogy is pretty on spot, because if you're not battling somebody, there's nobody in front of you. Mm-hmm. You got to be able to make it up on your own. It's like, what if you're that comedian that doesn't have that one person in the crowd that came with a stupid hat, and you can't make fun of nobody no more. Now you have to come up with something original, an idea that's all your own, that you own, that you put down, which is technically what you do when you make a song.
Well, a lot of them actually do. What they do is they fake that they're talking to the crowd. They are talking to the crowd, but they have, like, you know, this guy says he's a fireman. I got some go-to shit for that. You know, if you're from Chicago, I know what to say there. You know, they have a bunch of shit that they can go to. They're just, like, plugging it into the audience. And because it seems so spontaneous, it actually seems funnier. It seems like it's like a little trick. It's good to fuck around with the crowd sometimes. I actually don't mind a little bit of it every now and then. But there's a big difference between the kind of work that's involved in just ad-libbing on the fly and actually writing some shit and making it a bit. Some people can't do both. They can't make that transition. So that's a battle rapper who can't be a real rapper.
Right. To me and my brother, Poison Pen, I'm helping him right now in terms of with some sponsorships and whatnot. But mostly it's just been him that's been resurrecting a lot of these scenes. He's a very humble dude, my brother Poison Pen. He doesn't like to say that he came out and invented the idea of having pay-per-view battle rap. He doesn't like to say that, you know, if somebody wants to come and battle in New York, that he'll guarantee their safety to make sure nobody will touch him. And they'll tell all the other goons, yo, listen, he's here to battle. You put a finger on him, you're going to have to answer to me and everybody else in the squad. And they already know what it is. But I think...
So nobody comes over here and gets their ass kicked. Unless they really fuck up.
Have to be a real fuck up. You know what I mean? We guarantee people safety in New York because it's good for them to be here. We want people to come to New York to battle.
Imagine if there was comedy clubs where you had to guarantee people safety.
Yo, you got to, man. You
guarantee their safety in order to do stand-up. Holy shit.
There's a little more of a street element, I think, involved in battle rap, because you have people
a little more, just a tiny bit more.
So, but I think you'll find that there is a diverse amount of people that are battling, like a diverse group of people now that are battling, as opposed to it just being two people talking about guns from the same neighborhood.
Right,
you have you have Asian, Latino, Jewish, white,
how much
Muslim,
swiping just, goes on where dudes swipe dudes' raps. How much biting material? A lot of shit, huh?
There's some biting motherfuckers out there, Joe. Listen to me. Y'all live. We're live right here on the Joe Rogan Experience with Immortal Technique. There's some biters out there. There's some people who can't find a style of their own, or they don't have anything going for them.
You know what those people
are fucking
themselves.
Leech off this nigga.
And they're fucking themselves, really, because you don't know how good it feels to write some shit. You know, when I write some shit and perform, and like, woo, that just came to me from the universe. The universe told me that I'm doing the right thing, so it gave me some inspiration. Right. It gave me an idea. I put in the work, and I got a result, and it just feels tremendous. They don't get that. They don't get that feeling. So it's like this hollow, empty, whore-like hole feeling. You know, fill the hole, and then fill the hole, and then they're not really creating anything. It's fairly fascinating. It's kind of a fascinating way to live life. It's got to be a weird, hollow, empty feeling.
But you know, in the same respect, when comedy has ghostwriters, for example,
That's different. That's a job. You know, when a guy puts together, like, I know some great comics who do that.
But there are people in battle rap, and there are people in rap, period, mm-hmm. who have plenty of ghostwriters as well. And I'm wondering,
I don't think there's anything wrong with
that. Does that take away from, that's the interesting thing. To you, it doesn't, because in the culture of comedy, where you have somebody like a Paul Mooney who wrote for Richard Pryor, mm-hmm. where you have somebody like maybe a Jeff Ross who now write for this mm-hmm. person or that.
Sure.
That's seen as okay, that's acceptable. That's great. That
well, even like the greats, like Chris Rock. Chris Rock used Nick DiPaolo Absolutely. And Jeff Ross, Rich Voss, rather. He used, they're funny comics. They're great comics. And
if people bounce ideas off, it helps. I think in hip-hop, though, I think that's looked down upon a lot more than it is anywhere else. It's like, it's the kind of elephant in the room that uh-huh. people don't accept.
Well, there's a lot of people in comedy that don't accept it either. Like guys like Louis C.K. writes his own shit every year. Every year he writes his own new hour every year, and he's one of the rare guys that does it. And he not only does it, he does it while he's actually doing a television show too that he also edits and produces. Jesus. He's a maniac. I don't know how the fuck he does it. It's really incredible. He's basically
on a mouthful pill. That's what they're
No, he's basically obsessed with doing great shit, and the results have been so spectacular. He's just continuing on that obsessive path. It's amazing. He's just
Shout out to Louis, because that's what I do. I write all my own rhymes. Nobody come up in there and says, "Hey, you should rap to this beat, or you should rhyme about that." It has to be
Joey Diaz does that. I do that. I don't really accept ideas from people, but that's because I have my own shit I'm trying to work out already. It's not that their ideas aren't great. It's just at a certain point in time, I like to have it all come from my head.
And there's a difference in between taking something that's kind of half done and bouncing it off people you respect. And being like, you know what, this is half done, write the rest of it for me, I'll be back.
Some
later.
Comics give each other taglines, too. Like, that's one thing that's really cool that I really like doing. I like doing that for someone, like, someone comes off stage, and you're like, what if he said this at the end? I'm like, oh, shit. It's fun. And then when you do it, it's cool, because, like, if somebody gives you a tagline, and then you do it, it's like a shout-out to your friend every time you're on stage. It's kind of cool. You know, I don't even remember the bit, but somebody gave me a great tagline once, and I would always think about them every time I would say it. Like, it's my friend, you know, hook my bit up with a little extra punch, a little extra thing. That's a thing that comics would do for each other. Do rappers write raps for each other?
Yeah, all the time.
Like if someone like hears you doing a rap and then says, "Oh, did you know that rhymes with
booty?"
No, I think it's more like that. I think it's more like, you know, for example, if you're signed to a major and you wrote a song and they like it, they can take your song since they own your intellectual property and you're signed to them, and they can give it to someone else, being like, "Oh yeah, you wrote this song for you for like JR whatever, and we're going to give it to this rapper."
It's funny famous. That they used to be valid, that was like a real business. It's like when you look at what a record label is now, like, you talk about something that's been diminished. It's them and the porn industry have been like the most diminished.
Because of the internet?
Fuck yeah. All of a sudden, you have digital versions of everything you do. And it's
you don't need
download.
To go to a CD store where you might brush elbows with somebody in a trench coat buying a cum baby cum number 7. Like, you know what I mean? Like some crazy shit. Some Bukkake flick in like a sick part. And also, I think those places were embarrassing because you knew who was watching what kind of shit by what kind of aisle they were in.
Yep.
If you walk by, you were like, "Oh, this you're
crazy
in like the
pissing
shit,
you're in
the German, you're in the German shit, crazy porn section. Get the fuck out of here, dude."
Yeah, you don't want to hang out with that guy anymore. Even if it's like his own private thing, it's like you're into shit porn.
I've never went to that kind of place with anybody. So
that business got destroyed. That business and the music business. Mm-hmm. It used to be like the only way to get famous was you had to get on the radio. But now the internet has really completely bypassed that, because the radio, you know, the radio only works when you listen to the radio. The internet is a part of everything.
Everything.
It's getting so weird, man. My Twitter is so strange to me, because I'm finding out more shit through my Twitter, through people sending me things about the latest discoveries, about Egyptian boats that they found from, you know, they believe they found Atlantis, and there's a new discovery. Gorillas have figured out how to, stop traps and disarm traps. You find this shit, it's like a constant barrage of insane shit and information you're getting from people all day long. Like, this is so new to humanity. Like, we're not even sure the effects this is going to have on human beings just in the next 10 or 20 years. Like, what people are going to be like with this incredible access to information.
Well, I mean,
battering us with the reality.
I put it on the song we opened up the show with, you know what I mean? I speak to those, you know what I mean, that have become socially autistic. Is that where society is heading now? I don't need to interact with you if I don't want to. I'm here because that's the type of dude I am. I'll come to the show. But everyone seems to be able to want to call into life. You know what I mean? You meet more people on the internet that you're going to meet in real life. You know what I mean?
You would never have the opportunity to meet hundreds of new people instantly.
Right. And then or you have access to information, or you know, you don't send letters no more, you send an email,
right?
You know what I mean? You don't call nobody no more, you Skype with them, you know what I mean? In some ways, there's benefits to that. It creates the ability to communicate with people, but what kind of communication? Because I've known individuals to severely misconstrue a text or an email before that they can't get from a personal, like, I look at you, there's something about the way you stand that tells me what your intentions are, the way you move. And I think even in race relations, this works, because people who have been exposed to different races or different cultures of people, they look and see, okay, someone's rolling up on walking down the street. You know, he's not a criminal. He looks like this motherfucker's lost. I would be like, yo, man, you know, the highway's around the corner, as opposed to being like, oh, because they're from here, they're probably planning this or that, rather than looking at their actual actions or stance. Like, in terms of a regular conversation, your tone of voice, you know what I mean? The way you look.
It's missing in text. Everything. Well, again, you know, people have to treat everybody else as if it was you living another life. Then you wouldn't have to worry. You'd realize this guy's cool. Right. It's cunts. That's the problem, goddammit. As I said, that needs to be our new motto. We're America, and we're not cunts. And everything we do that's cunty, stop doing it. That's cunty shit, man.
I mean, unless people are making billions of dollars off.
Gotta
of it
stop. You know,
they won't stop.
If you lose $1 billion a year and you don't have to be a cunt, wouldn't you be happier? Wouldn't you be happy doing your business, making half as much, having a 1,000-foot yacht instead of a 2,000-foot yacht?
But I mean,
victimizing the world.
I think that's where American capitalism has the spotlight on it. Because let's say you and me have a company that averages, you know, around $12 billion a year of gross revenue sales. You know, we're a success. But then the next year, you know, and every year we keep getting a little bit bigger, you know, $12 billion.
But then you get into math and you spend all your money on hookers
No, I'm just saying, 1 year, imagine we make $11 billion. You know, not even gross. We're talking about net right now.
Okay.
We make $11 billion.
What are
profit.
We doing? Are we selling anything?
It doesn't matter. the point being,
I just thought I know what kind of business I'm in. I'm so fucking successful.
The point being, Joe, is to a lot of people in the business community and to the model of business, we're a failure now. We're downsizing. We're not going up from 12.5 billion to 13. Now we're back to 11. People are like, oh, this business is on the decline. We just made $11 billion. That's just how they think. You know what I mean? If you're not always expanding, if you're not buying new people, if you're not buying new resources, if you haven't obtained a good rapport with a government that makes, you know, labor laws very, very simple for you to deal with, then you're a failure. And I think that's what needs to change, too, in order for people to see themselves and other individuals.
Yeah, there's going to be some karma-free ways to do things, you know. And I've always said, like, we need to figure out a karma-free iPhone. We find out what's really involved in getting the minerals to make iPhones. Like, well, this is fucked up. It may very well be some children in the Congo who are scraping the mountains for minerals that goes into your iPhone. Like, there's got to be a way around that. Is there a way around that? And how much would you be willing to pay for an iPhone that's not manufactured in a Chinese suicide factory? You know, I mean, these places where they have nets set up in between buildings, because so many fucking employees have committed suicide, they've actually done this. And people say, well, actually, the amount of people that commit suicide in these places, it's very similar to the amount of people that commit suicide in real life. Well, you know what the difference is? That's not real life. That's their job. How many fucking people commit suicide at work? You know, like, you want to talk about despair. They're living in crazy dormitories and they're jumping off the roof into concrete to end it.
Well, I mean, they're in a dorm.
Yeah.
That's basic. I mean, we're talking
about the idea that okay with that is crazy.
If somebody, I'm not criticizing
China,
the whole China, but I'm saying, look, if you don't like prison here, you don't like the legal system here, you're really not going to like it in China.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If we're talking about a government that is very authoritarian, something that the U.S., I think, really kind of envies, the ability for them to just tell people to shut the fuck up about things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, listen, dude, we're doing all the da-da-da-da-da-da. Oh, you're gonna complain? Shut up now. The button's been pressed and everyone shuts up. You know what I mean? Olympics are here. Take dog off the menu everywhere. I don't want to see it because these people from Europe and America, that's their best friend. You know what I mean? You might shoot a nigga. You won't go to jail. You fuck with a dog. Yeah, that's the white man's best friend. You're going to jail, dude. You know, that's what it is. They made them niggas. They found all these different species of dogs. And in Germany and in all these other places during the Middle Ages, they bred them to be what they are
and
today.
And the Chinese people ate the fuck
then,
out of them.
And then someone decided that they tasted really good.
I bet they do.
I don't know. I've had rabbit. Dogs. I've never had.
Rabbit's delicious.
I've never had dog, though.
Don't tell Eddie Bravo, though. He'll go crazy. Eddie Bravo loves rabbits. It's all good. Everybody no, picks their animals. Me, I'm a dog man.
But I'm just saying, like, to me, if we're at a point where society is just unwilling to move, then what's the only thing that can rectify that? A cataclysm, you think?
No, the only thing that can rectify it is information. People have to change. You have to change who the fuck you are. If you're a person that's part of the problem and you're aware that you're part of the problem, right. You got to find a path away from that.
But
the real problem is you get addicted to life. You get caught up in a system where you have a mortgage and you have car payments and you have credit card bills and you have this is for gas, this is for food, this is for, and you have these numbers that you have to achieve on a regular basis. So there's almost no way you can detach yourself from the system and then start off with some new path. It's like you need constant income. If you have a family, you need constant income. If you have a mortgage, you need constant income. You know, and that's how most of us are stuck. Most of us are stuck because we sort of got on some sort of a path, and then we became involved in the system due to financial necessity. It's like, no, I mean, you're not going to go homeless. You're not going to have your fucking kids be poor just because you have a dream of trying to make it as an author. You know, you're going to have to find a way to do both right. of them at the same time. You're going to have to find a way to work around it. You can't just detach yourself from the system. That's why so many people
minimize
have a hard time changing. Yeah, that's why so many people have a hard time changing is they don't have the time for reflection. And when people are caught up in any sort of fanatical pursuit, especially financial fanatical pursuit, it becomes about ones and zeros. It becomes about numbers. It becomes about adding zeros to the ledger. It doesn't become about your own personal growth and you as a human being trying to find yourself in a better place in this world. It doesn't become about that. That's the real issue. The real issue is the numbers trick you into thinking that they're real. Instead of thinking that, because they are real, you can get things from them, real things like a house that you can knock on. You can get a car that you knock on that car. That's a real car. So there is something real that you get from it. But essentially, we've decided that those things are, that you can get those things from money. We've decided that. We've all decided that. And because it's broken down to a number thing, then that becomes the grand pursuit. The grand pursuit becomes this crazy idea that you need to stockpile numbers at the expense of humanity, and that humanity shouldn't be put at the very forefront of any of the decisions. So all of this could have been avoided. Everything could have been avoided if any company realized that humanity has to be first. So if you're poisoning rivers, if you're, you know, fucking people out of land, you cannot operate like that. There must be a humane way to progress and do business. If it only involves littering, if it only involves polluting, and it only involves murder, well, then that's ridiculous. That this shouldn't be a task that's taken forth by people. But because of the fact that you can get ones and zeros from those things, the ones and zeros have tricked us into thinking that they are the end-all be-all. By providing us with real things that come from the ones and zeros, they have sort of figured out a way to hijack our system. But we have to realize that solid things don't mean shit if you don't have your humanity. So it's not about ones and zeros. It's about humanity first. Then it's about, should humanity engage in this pursuit? Should humanity, you know, drill oil off the coast when it can fuck up like that and ruin millions of square miles
of ocean?
People
were saying there would be nothing wrong with it. This was a perfectly...
Right, and then we find out that it was all about ones and zeros. The reason why it happened in the first place is because the company that was building the well, they cut a few corners because they were trying to make a deadline, and they put a less effective sort of a system in place. And then it fucking exploded and killed people and fucked up everything for a long-ass time. Why? Because of ones and zeros, not because of humanity. You know, it's the same thing with Fukushima. You know, people look at this reactor failing and melting down, and there's all sorts of scientific, you know, explanations for why it all went wrong. But the bottom line is, you shouldn't make something like that if you can't shut it off. You could, you shouldn't make something where if the power goes out, the whole place is fucked for 100,000 years. Right. That's crazy. That's crazy. I mean, and that's a ones and zeros economic situation.
I think when you're talking about an element, though, that has been refined, we're talking about U-235.
Like nuclear power?
We're talking about, when you're talking about uranium, you're talking about plutonium, all of these elements that are created by mankind, these isotopes,
right.
They're generally unstable. They might have the same number of protons and electrons, but it's the neutrons that flow out of them. What I always thought was interesting is, how do the neutrons know just to leave that they're just too many, that we all just don't fit, or that they just
Neutrons don't take anybody's bullshit.
Neutrons just bounce the fuck out, and it creates such an unstable element that
even toying with something
like that, you don't know, because it doesn't have a stable physical property.
Right.
There is no shut off.
Well, that's what the nutty thing is. There's no way to cool it off, apparently.
Yeah, they had to use whatever,
they used ocean water.
It's
still not really cooling it off. And they don't know what the fuck is going to happen. I mean, the whole thing is insane. And it all happened because someone thought that they could profit from it. They needed power. They needed to supply all these people with power. And that became the way to do it. It just seems so nutty. It seems so incredibly nutty. And it's either that, or what are you going to do? You're going to coal? You're going to fucking, you know, have coal factories and fuck up the environment even more? And which one are you going to go with? We need some electricity, bitch.
Right.
Someone needs to figure out a better way than that.
Solar energy. Yeah.
But we get tripped up
energy,
in these one ways. We get tripped up. We get caught up in this one way, and we think that's the only way possible. You know, I don't know what the fuck the Egyptians did, but they did something. They did something that allowed them to move these giant blocks of stone. Like, what the fuck were they doing? What kind of power did they have?
They enslaved thousands of people and told them to move that stone.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. I mean, even if they did that, how the fuck did they pull it off? Even if they had thousands of people.
But they had engineering at that. I think at that particular time, what we failed to see and we failed to realize is that, look, all of the documentation that they had was lost in countless amount of wars. It's been scattered.
Well, the libraries of Alexandria was actually burned. They were burnt down twice. We've lost all that information, but it still doesn't in any way answer the question. How the fuck did they do that? Because what you're looking at is something that we can't do right now. I mean, there's a lot of those pieces of stone.
I think we can do it right now. You know what I mean?
Some of them are cut from a quarry. It was miles away. And these motherfuckers moved these 1,000-ton stone blocks. Like, how about the Acropolis where the Parthenon is under? It's under the Parthenon, rather, these huge fucking stones that no one has any idea how they moved them there. No one has any idea how old they are. They just somehow or another, someone cut these giant stones and put them into place, and you just go, what?
But, I mean, when you go down to South America, you go to see the Incas, you'll see that, too, in Machu Picchu.
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfectly.
Incredible work.
As if they were cut by lasers.
Mm-hmm. How about the Pumapunku and all that shit up in... You know, in Peru, it's amazing.
Or how did the heads on Easter Island get there? Yeah. And all that extracurricular shit.
Oh, yeah. Well, not only that, they found out those heads aren't just heads anymore. They started digging underneath them, and there's whole bodies to those things. Whole bodies, and it's interesting because they're not weathered. So they get to see the much more intricate carvings, like to see like their hands and shit. But the bodies go like way down low. There's been a whole field of study now. Now they're really kind of tripping out about how...
It seems very suspect that they just didn't look at that before. Like, oh,
not really,
wait,
man, because it's
it
sort
goes
of...
farther down.
Two things. One, they didn't have the technology, I don't think, to measure the earth.
A shovel?
Like, no, seismic. Because if you just dig down like that, you could fuck it up. You could fuck up the site.
Right.
And when they do that, you're supposed to do it, like, microscopically. When you, like, this thing that they're doing in Turkey, this Göbekli Tepe... This is one of the oldest known structures it's at least 13,000 years old, and it was built by people who they thought were, like, at the time they were hunter and gatherers. It throws a big monkey wrench into that because there's these huge stone columns and this, you know, 9-foot-tall stone columns with, you know, exotic animals carved into them. Incredible, incredible work. And it's all from 13,000+ years ago. And it was all filled in 13,000 years ago, artificially filled in.
And humanity is thousands of years older than we probably think it is.
Yeah, much more.
Convinced ourselves.
But what's nutty about this one is that they've actually found that it somehow or another was buried. And they purposely buried it 13,000 years ago. My point was they've only been able to explore a tiny percentage of this site because when they explore it, they use like fucking toothbrushes and
right,
shit.
Exactly.
They're looking for any little thing. They don't want to dig in with a shovel and break a bone that could have been a skull. You know, they don't want to fuck up, so they're doing everything nice and slow. So they've only uncovered like a very small percentage of this place. So it's not suspect that the Easter Island guys never dug into that because if they did, they'd do it really precisely.
I mean, look at that shit. I mean,
it's amazing.
It just seems like a stone. Yeah, but it seems like if here's the land right here, and then they're probably like, hey, look, it's still going down. Let's go. You know, like I mean, these things have been in here for
sort of, Brian. But you got to understand when they did find them, when they initially found them, they were so shocked that they were so big in
the first place, they couldn't
figure out how people made them.
It's not even a head, but how did they get that stone there?
Yeah, they don't know where it came from. I mean, it came from somewhere on the island, obviously.
And
but they
don't
know
how Snoop Dogg get invited.
That's not Snoop. That's one of his little homies. You take some other. There's other pictures of them if you find them online. They're pretty interesting. Man. There's a lot of work that's been dedicated to that now, and then trying to figure out how the fuck they did it and what it's supposed to represent too. Why are they doing the same guy like that over and over and over again? Who is that guy? And of course, that's where the ancient aliens come in. You know, those dudes, those Giorgio Tsoukalos dudes, we've had him on the podcast a bunch of times. I love that guy.
I heard Katy Perry wants to meet him. Like, there was, like, this thing, like, reports the other day.
Imagine if we made her and him hook it up, and then he replaced Russell Brand.
No, if they met, and then we met her, and then we stole her from George.
Do you want to steal Katy Perry? Get out of here, son.
Fuck yeah, I want
Katy
Perry.
You
want to
be her beta boyfriend that travels around with her on tour?
Yes.
Trust me, dude, you don't want that. You don't want that gig. She'll force you to get fat again. Don't do it.
Did you talk about on a podcast about how hilarious that Tim Heidecker has been going off on Russell?
We didn't talk about
Brand.
Russell Brand is an English guy who's a really funny actor. Mm-hmm. He's really funny. And
Get Him to the Greek Dude, right?
Yeah, I didn't see that movie, but I loved him in the Sarah Marshall movie. But he's apparently he's got a talk show. And every time it's on, Tim Heidecker destroys it. He just goes after it and like spends the whole hour like writing hashtag like vomit, like sarcastic shit about things not being funny. Hashtag vomit, you know, just shitting all over Russell Brand.
Well, he's
obsessed with it.
I think his new show is I forget what it's called. It's like something X or something like
Brand
that.
Brand X. I think
Brand X.
But is it good? Have you seen it?
No, I won't. I actually not a big fan of his.
You don't like him as an actor?
No, actor, I do like him as an actor. But this is not an actor. This is like some weird like talk show, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that. But the poster is so... They have it all over Sunset, and it's just him like laying back with his feet up and like... I don't know.
Did you see what someone wrote on one of the posters?
Yeah.
Graffiti? What did they write?
I'd rather watch Katy Perry's new movie.
Oh, that's some
damn,
loyal fans. There you go, Katy. That's some loyal fans, baby.
Is that what it says? Yeah, where is it?
That's not the...
This is
the poster that they did it to.
Yeah, he's wild. Sunset. Don't you get it? He's English and wild.
Yeah, but if you look at Tim Heidecker, who does Tim and Eric, if you look at his Twitter page, it's just one after another, just hilarious.
He's just tearing them up.
Tearing them up.
I guess a lot of people are saying it's not very good.
He just doesn't like him.
I guess
mediocrity.
He likes Katy Perry.
He's a warrior against mediocrity.
I think he's just trying to impress Katy.
You think so?
And I don't blame him.
Could be that, too.
Maybe that. Yeah. He's trying to get points saying, yo, look, your man don't like you, don't appreciate you. I'll appreciate you. Look at me destroy your ex.
Right. Maybe. It could be a little bit of that. You think?
Trying to holler.
You really think so?
Why don't we ask him right now? Is he going to respond to us on Twitter, to me and Joe? We saying, you want her, just holler.
I think he's just a champion against mediocrity.
That could be.
I think he just really genuinely thinks that guy sucks.
Excuse me, what are you doing to Katy? Stop doing it to Katy. Oh.
Why did he agree to that? Why did he agree to that photo? Son, do you have friends? Do you have friends? Because they shouldn't.
I think when you get enough money, you're just surrounded by yes men.
Yes men. Is that really true? I think there's a way to avoid that. There's got to be.
No, there are some
people
that will say, "Hey, man, you know, like for example, I have a lot of friends. Like one of my producers, name is Southpaw. I've known this brother for over 30 years. You know, we went to nursery school together. If I'm on some bullshit, he'll tell me, like, yo, man, look, dude, get the fuck out of here.
Does he have to tell you that sometimes?
Yes. Definitely has to tell me. Yo, man, like, when we were doing the last album, like, yo, man, get the fuck up, man. We got to get this going. We got to get this moving. Like, he's a good motivator when he's on it. When he's on some bullshit, I'm the one that's got to motivate him.
Oh, so you guys battle when you're on the road?
Battle. I mean, he comes on the road sometimes. It depends on what the dynamic is, like what I need. I have different amounts of people that'll come, like people from the Rebel Arms.
It's possible to not live your life with yes men, but you got to be you got to be your own worst critic. You got to be your. I mean, a lot of people don't like to do that. They don't like that feeling of being, of introspective feeling of the feeling of really analyzing yourself objectively. A lot of people don't like that. That's why they need someone to check them.
Well, because you have to. You can do it yourself. Hypocrisy.
Yeah, you can do it yourself. You have to look at yourself, but it's finding that time. See, for me, that's where the isolation tank comes in. You know, I use a sensory deprivation tank. It's like a tank you lie in with water. When I'm in that thing, there's nothing. It's quiet. There's no. I'm not seeing anything. I'm not feeling anything. I'm just floating in that water. And when you're doing that, you're forced to think about yourself. You're forced to analyze your behavior. It's like there's nothing else there to distract you. There's no TV to watch to flood your brain with useless shit. There's no email to check. There's no Twitter to check. There's no wall to stare at and look at a painting. You know, you're forced to be alone with your thoughts. So you're forced to analyze your life. And it makes me think that there's not a lot of time in life to ever achieve that sort of same state, the state of self-analysis. There's not a lot of time to do that. And if you're not analyzing, then a lot of the fucking you're doing just running around with slippery shoes on. You know, you're not getting anywhere. You're fucking this thing up. You're not looking at it. You're learning a little bit here and there, but not as much as you could be if you just really spent a certain amount of required time to just analyze your shit. And this, again, what people don't do. So that and don't be a cunt are the two best piece of advices that a human being could ever get. And yet, those are also two pieces of advice they never give you. But that's really the simplest thing. That's the only way we're going to fix this world. We're not going to fix this world, I don't think, through some new technology or through some actual genetic evolution. I think we're going to fix this world through a behavioral revolution. And that revolution is we're going to have to start looking at each other differently.
Let me ask you. The other way the world can change, and since we are in 2012, I'd be remiss from bringing it up. People are saying now that there'll be some kind of cataclysm at some point, some cataclysmic event. I think, even though I don't necessarily agree that that's definitely going to happen, I always say that I can subscribe to the possibility of something like that happening.
People have always said that, though, man. Y2K.
But that's not the point. Not Y2K or the Mayan prophecy. Just the point that if something terrible did happen, isn't that the time when everybody seems to come together?
Yeah, and if 9/11.
And if that terrible thing was permanent and it wasn't something we could just push to the back of our memory and say, hey, I don't want to get in the isolation tank and deal with the fact that, yes, we did sponsor a jihad against the Russians. And when someone was blowing things up, there's some mom in Russia right now who cried over her dead son back in the 70s and 80s. And her pain is no different than any American mother that's, you know, suffering because their son died in Iraq. At some point, if we don't put ourselves in that isolation tank and say, you know, we can't escape this. This is something permanent that has affected our
world. Well, the real problem is the word
then
we.
Then we have to come together.
Yeah, the problem is the word we. You know, it's like, who's actually doing this? Who's actually doing it? It's a very small amount of people that are actually in charge of the heinous acts of the world. It's really kind of fucked up. Small amount of people put forth the motion of a large group of people that work for the cause. But it's a very small amount of cunts. It's really, it's kind of incredible when you really stop and look at how fucked up the world is through a small amount of people. Isolated cunts. Yeah. Yeah. Like guys like Dick Cheney. Remember when he was in that bunker all the time?
Deciding what Bush would do?
What the fuck was that about? Dude would just hide in the bunker and we would just go, oh, we hear Dick. How do I know he's in the bunker? I mean, that seems really stupid. I'm not even trying to find this out and I know that he's in the bunker. You know what I mean? What the fuck kind of weird shit is that? Are you so confident in that goddamn bunker?
Listen, people like him are in the position that they're in because they convince other individuals that they're moral leaders. That in some way, like, look, this is my only thing in terms of Republicans and Democrats when we have this debate and we discuss it. They're both have to pander to corporations. Mm-hmm. However, yeah. in my experience, I've met a lot more conservative people that try to play pious and like, oh, that's so horrible. And as opposed to saying, yeah, we're all part of this. You know what I mean? As opposed to just being who you want to be. Instead, you lie about who you want to be. And then you're trying to pick men up in an airport bathroom mm-hmm. or you're secretly selling arms to enemies or you're doing – at least just be who you are. But at some point, you couldn't be in that position you are unless you didn't convince people that you're a good Christian. You know what I mean? That you're a humble person, that you care about other people, when in reality – you're probably not any of these things. And you got into politics because it's a good fucking payday.
Well, it's also they want power.
Power, too.
The reason why...
Or women.
The reason why anybody who wants to be president shouldn't be president is that nobody should want to be president. Nobody should want to be that guy, the one guy that gets to decide everything. How arrogant are you? You're crazy. You're out of your fucking mind. The position shouldn't exist anymore. It shouldn't be a way where one person is thought of as our great leader in 2012. It's nonsense. That's a form of leadership, a form of hierarchy that exists in small groups of primates, okay? That alpha shit works with one person when there's like 50 people.
But I don't think
one's got to be the bad motherfucker, the leader of the tribe.
I don't think that really is a functional system now. I think that's the imagery the system gives you. But obviously,
well, I know, but I'm saying like he should Obama, even abandon that. He has a cabinet. Yeah.
But people have, but not just the cabinet. He has a plethora of backers mm-hmm. that have given financially to it. And at the end of every election,
he represents them.
These motherfuckers expect to get paid. They expect to get what they gave. You know, yeah. Like if I make a fucking investment, homie, I want some returns. This is what's going to, you're going to do something for me. I gave
That's
to you.
That's why Mitt Romney is so dangerous with this medical marijuana shit. He's the most dangerous because he says he'll fight tooth and claw to stop medical marijuana. Well, of course you will. Of course you will. Someone's paying you to do that. It's smart. Right. Smart for you. Smart for you to get on that hustle, too. That hustle is a weak-ass hustle. It's a dumber hustle. The Republican hustle is way dumber because a lot of it is based on, you know, silly ideologies.
Well,
it's based on people that don't want to think.
One of their primary selling points has always been religion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm talking about.
Especially in the modern age. And I would say more so after the Reagan era, because one of the first presidents to really bring out evangelical voters was actually Jimmy Carter and not any Republican.
Really?
At first
it's always attributed to Reagan's administration that they actively targeted them.
Jimmy had more of them. Again, down south, very Christian, humanitarian.
Peanut farmer.
Played that up very much so, man of the people. But at some particular point, if we're incorporating your philosophy into it and we're incorporating all this stuff, I always thought about it this way. You know, if religion is the selling point, then let's sit in that tank where we move everything apart and we think about humanity as a whole. In Egypt, 3,500 years ago, people worshiped deities like Anubis, Osiris, you know, an anthropomorphic figure with the body of a human being and the head of a jackal or an owl.
Right. You know why they did that?
And
they were high as fuck, son. That's why.
Or they prayed to these figures thinking that they were going to bring them food or love or long life or a cure
for
sickness.
Money, bitches.
Right. Everything that was real back then, that's real to them now, or that's fake then, that's fake now. But my thing is this, if we look at it from that perspective now as Americans, like, oh, that's so ridiculous, somebody's worshiping a statue like that with it. Well, that's 3,500 years from now. If humanity makes it 3,500 years from today and they look back at this time, I know exactly what they'll say. They'll say, just as we said about those people, look at these ridiculous, pathetic human beings that lived at this time. They worshipped a dead guy nailed to a piece of wood, and they couldn't understand the most basic thing he was trying to tell people, which is treat others the way you want to be treated.
Or they worshipped a dude who you can't even draw, or people want to kill you.
Right. Or at any point took a position that said, I'm going
to
create the ability to just tell people something and not have them question it ever at all.
Yeah.
That's the most dangerous part I think about
anything,
because you should be able to say, hey, man, if one of these things is illogical, then all of them have to be illogical. If you're telling me, oh, it's impossible for Jesus to have resurrected, okay, but it's possible for a man to divide the ocean, for someone that the Prophet Muhammad, peace be on him, ascends into heaven, that's the same thing to me, or is the same impossibility. But I think that when you look at people's lives who live in poverty, the reason that that's so that's so prevalent there is because their lives are so ridiculous, because their lives are so insane that I couldn't understand. But that's just as outlandish to me as walking on water. The idea that, you know what, I'm going to have to drink my own piss today, or I'm not going to fucking be hydrated, or I have to go for 3 days without food, or I have to cut pieces of my flesh out.
So you're saying that their life was so fucked that the religion, it was easy to give them religion.
Well, I'll put it this way. I'll give you a personal example rather than using a hypothetical. My grandmother, whose house I just left, where I just, like I was telling you before, I took her to Vaughn's. I always show grandma love. I care about her a lot. She raised 10 kids. You know what I mean? And, mm-hmm. and God bless her soul. My grandfather, God rest his soul, was a good man in his later years, but he fucked up a lot of things in his first years. So he wasn't around a lot. And I always think to myself, like, there's something about the idea that grandma had that somewhere in the sky that a guy named Jesus, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. with the mullet and the cut, you know what I mean, and the blue eyes was out there watching her, and she depended on that idea. I'm not trying to steal that love and compassion from anybody. I'm not trying to take any religion away from people at all. I just tell them all the time that unless your religion makes you a better person, unless it makes you less judgmental over people's lives, if it makes you more generous, if it makes you look at people and say, hey, just like you said, you know what? What if I was that person? What if I grew up like that? Then it's ennobled you. But if it makes you more pretentious, if it makes you more of an asshole, if it makes you say, I just have the real truth and everyone who doesn't believe in what I believe in is going to hell, then your religion has failed you as much as you failed that religion, in my humble opinion. That's all I would say. That without that connection...
It's just an ideology. And the real problem with the ideology is it answers questions that have no answers. Doesn't make any sense. It's not that there couldn't have been a Jesus, not that even couldn't have been a guy who came back from the dead. How the fuck do you know? Right. I don't know.
Exactly.
Okay, if you're talking about one magical act, let's just go hypothetical completely. One magical act. You're saying that magic can't exist? Is that what you're saying? I don't. Maybe it can't right now. Maybe it did at one time. I mean, isn't it possible that somewhere along the line, someone had figured something fucking crazy out? Just like today, they figured out the internet. Just like today, they figured out cell phones right. and bullets and laser beams. Who the fuck knows? What do I know? But what I do know is that you you can't make absolutes with human beings. You can't tell me that you know the answers. Because if you go back to a science book from 100 years ago, almost none of it is like a medical book, like medical science. Almost none of it is applicable. Like, right. the things they used to do to help people 200 years ago, 300 years ago when they were sick.
Or space.
That's nothing.
Anything, right?
That's nothing. And you're counting on the word of God from people who wrote it down more than 2,000 years ago. And by the way, the oldest version of it is the Dead Sea Scrolls. They wrote it on animal skins and left it in fucking clay jars in the hills of Qumran. And this shit is like 1,000 years older than even the oldest version of the ancient Hebrew Bible.
And they can't even acknowledge the present day New Testament. They're saying they have a debate now about what language it was in, whether it was in Greek or Aramaic. So even at that point, we're talking about the inability to sit down and precisely time something.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people don't understand as well, that ancient Hebrew was also, they didn't have numbers. So like the letter A doubled as the number one. Right. So, and then words had like numeric value, like the word love and the word God, they have the same numeric value. And that was like important for the way they wrote things. They wrote things not just with letters, but numerically. It's really trippy. And apparently that's all lost in the translation to Latin and Greek and right. like their original
words. Latin and Greek, for example, those ancient languages like a Hebrew, Arabic, Latin, Greek, there are words that mean several different things.
Sure,
and I think
yeah.
it's just a testament to how basic our form of communication is that in rap and lyricism, I have to create wordplay, double entendres, things that have double meanings. This that really means this. This
Can you
that's
imagine
a,
rhyming
that a metaphor,
in ancient Hebrew?
That a metaphor and a simile where those aren't even necessary in other languages because it's written into the actual words. Like I could have a normal conversation with you in one of those ancient languages if we were back in those times. And they
maybe
would
not
they would be
though. Maybe it was
those.
Really fucking dumb, and that's why they don't do it that way anymore.
maybe
the
or
maybe shit
it
was...
didn't come across right. But I just know English being a very basic, you know, Germanic and Scandinavian type language. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
It's
that
definitely
came from the Anglos
different.
English.
Yeah, it's. I wonder what it would have been like to have a battle rap in ancient Hebrew.
No, but you know, I read an interesting account of ancient Greece and Byzantium at the time, and it was said that even the Emperor Justinian, there were different groups the way we have red Republicans, blue Democrats. They had the greens and blues back then that argued for different political factions. And it said within several of these books that I read that even the emperor and other people participated in some of these debates where it had to be at a certain tone. It had to be at a certain tempo. Like, so in, essentially they're politically battle rapping one another at some point
for their,
as a speech, but it had to have rhythm to it. It had to have a poetic.
No kidding. That's fascinating. I mean, I wonder what that was like. Do you think they rhyme things? Is there any evidence of, when's the earliest evidence of people figuring out that it's cool to rhyme shit?
Probably when someone went, and they went, ugh.
No, but I mean, like, what, is there, are there really old rhymes? Like old poems? Did old poems always rhyme? Noah dropped it like it's hot?
Yeah.
For real, when did rhyming start? Who figured out rhyming?
Have somebody.
You're a rhyming expert. You should know this.
At Immortal Tech.
Yeah.
Well, who invented funny?
Oh, yeah. That's impossible.
There we go.
Monkeys laugh at each other. You go to the zoo and one chimp will hit another chimp.
I'm saying that a lot of words sound the same. You never know who sounded right.
I know, but I wonder when the actual art of writing things down and making them rhyme, doing them correct, and doing in time.
Harry Mary.
Yeah. Someone figured out that there was something cool about that. Because there really is something cool about rhyming shit. It makes it better. You got to take a leak? Yeah, straight out that door. Last door on the left.
We got a show Friday.
Yeah, show Friday, you dirty freaks.
10:30, Joey Diaz, you said?
Yeah, Joey Diaz, Josh McDermott, Brian Redband, me, and a whole lot of other people that we're friends with that stop by, hopefully. Yeah. We don't know exactly what the lineup is, but that's the lineup so far. But it'll be Friday night, 10:30, in the Ice House Comedy Club, which is probably one of the fucking coolest spots on earth. Been here since like 1950-something. What was I just Googling? What was I looking at? I was talking to him about something crazy.
I don't know.
You don't remember?
I know.
Were you paying attention at all?
I ate an edible and...
Oh, you son of a bitch.
It kind
of
fucked
after
me
I ate that edible yesterday, if people are like, dude, Joe, you seem like you're on drugs yesterday. Yeah. Something like that. That was a weird one.
I ate more of it. And I forgot. I was just hungry. I've been eating edibles a lot lately just because I have so many edibles now.
You just decided to chew
on. I'm hungry. I'm like, wow, that is a Reese's cup. I'm hungry.
You should get some food in your house, bitch.
I know. I really should.
But being that high and listening to Honey Honey was really freakish, man.
Oh, I bet.
Holy shit, they were good.
Yeah.
Her voice is incredible, man. It's mind-boggling. The kind of, like I was saying, like you're making noise with your mouth and it makes people feel better.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird.
Insane. I would love to be able to. Wouldn't you love to be able to date a girl that could play an instrument and sing like that? I think that would. I've never done that. I think it would be, be different. It'd be sexy.
It's definitely sexy.
Like she'd write you a song, for your birthday or
silly
something.
Bitch. I want to hear your fucking crazy song you wrote about me, you silly bitch.
Yeah, but what if she was like crazy talented?
That would be really fucking bad for your ego. Some chick writing songs about you.
I think it would be amazing.
You're so vain.
If it was good, like her voice was really good.
I bet you think this song is about you. Don't. You're so vain. That was a badass bitch, Carly Simon. Yeah, you got to be really careful if you bang a famous singer and she writes a song about you, Warren Beatty.
People are really mad that you never answered who you thought killed Piggy.
Oh, fuck those people. You don't have to answer that silly goddamn question.
I got to give
this is the real question. Is Bigfoot real?
I think at some point he was.
At some point? And they don't exist anymore?
At some point he was. I mean, like we
said
before.
You think it's possible in the Pacific Northwest there might be an undiscovered primate?
I'm not sure. Never been there to the Pacific Northwest looking for a fucking primate.
I think that's a good question to ask.
But we've definitely met some primates on the road that act out of place and, they want to play monkey and they run into some real gorillas. And
I don't think that is the same thing. I think we're talking about a totally different
thing. No, but they definitely get the Bigfoot. They get that Sasquatch stomp. So that's what it is, baby.
I think that's a good question to ask almost anybody that comes on the podcast. Do they believe in Bigfoot? I started with Chael Sonnen.
I like
might
Biggie.
Have to talk. No.
I've asked like 10 people.
Who killed Biggie?
Yeah.
What was their response?
All the police.
Yeah, the Rampart unit. That was the Rolling Stones said it was the Rampart unit.
Mm. Yeah.
It wouldn't be the first time they shot a motherfucker with no consequence.
Well, not only that, it wouldn't be the first. I mean, back then you had to realize in the 1990s, essentially we were in the non-internet age. People had not changed from the old
Pac
way.
Got shot on the strip of Vegas with...
Yeah.
How many witnesses?
Yeah. It's the internet age has really changed a lot of shit. It's not as easy to just pull something off like that.
Right.
It's different. It's a different world. And I think, remember, you know, did you ever see Cocaine Cowboys?
Mm-hmm.
God damn, is that a good movie? God damn, is that a good movie? Cocaine Cowboys 2 as well, just as good. And anyway, when they talked about that one class, the graduating class of the Miami Police Academy, where everyone who graduated either wound up murdered or in jail for corruption. Every one of them. They were just crazy gangsters. The whole police department was corrupt. Money. That's amazing.
I mean, we had something like that in Harlem called the Dirty 30, where they were just robbing drug dealers.
Was it dirty cops?
There was such a gang, and it was the 30th precinct, I believe.
Oh.
So I think what they did was that they would just continuously rob drug dealers, harass individuals for money, and they were extorting dealers at the time.
Jesus Christ.
It was crazy. One of my friends' fathers said that at a particular time, the cops came in, raided what he had, and said, you know what? We're taking the money, but we're going to leave the stash, and we're going to make sure nobody fucks with you, and we're going to give you extra stash here. We got some more smack for you. Press up, do whatever you want, and then we'll come back and we'll take a percentage and you can have your whatever the fuck cut. He said this went on for a couple of months, and he was like, yo, you know what? Finally, I'm out of this. He said he don't even know what happened to his friend that was into it with 5-0. He said, basically, you know what?
So the police made some sort of a deal where they would take a piece of the action.
Right, absolutely.
Ooh, it's such a slippery slope. If you're a cop and you start doing illegal shit, you really can't stop. I mean, how do you stop and become a good cop again? It's so hard for them to stop.
Plus, drug dealers, they don't give a fuck about no badge, homie. You stole $10 million from me. I'm going to fucking kill you.
Yeah, the badge is nonsense. Your family. You're just a person. Right. At the end of the day, you're just a person. And that's the creepiest thing that a cop could think of is that they're in a gang. You know, it's their gang versus your gang.
But, I mean, keep it real.
That's what it is.
That's kind of what it is. You know what I mean? You fuck with one of them, they'll come get you, and they're not playing. You know what I mean?
Of course, yeah. And, you know, that's why that's why they, look, if they're protecting good people from crime, that's all good. It's when they become the people that are perpetrating the crime that sort of a situation becomes problematic.
They become the protector of those individuals.
Yeah.
You know, someone once said that they only exist in a society where, you know, you have such a distinction between poor and rich. You know, then if people were equal in a society, that you wouldn't, they wouldn't.
Yeah,
need
but
them
the
as
problem with people being equal is free will and activity and the environment. I mean, it's like you would have to do a lot to make people equal, and it wouldn't involve just the people who are poor. It would involve everybody, and it's the process of thousands of years of human behavior. It's not a simple process. There's people that are always going to be lazy cunts. And I don't know how do you fix that. But when you give people, this is the reality of a welfare state. The reality of a welfare state is, as a community, we should always be willing to help our brothers and sisters and help people who have experienced circumstances beyond their control and have a community like stand up for each other. You know, when I know people who their house is burned down and their folks next door let them move into the basement with their whole family until they rebuilt their house up again. Like that kind of stuff is fucking beautiful. I love hearing shit like that. That's human beings helping other human beings. But there's a difference between that and then giving people something when they're poor and they don't have to do anything for it. There's a real problem with human beings. And when you get people used to money for nothing, they get lazy as fuck. They have no reason to do anything. It's just natural human behavior. It feeds into some baby shit that you... And so these people, without developing any character, and having everyone around them living the same way, so they're imitating their atmosphere, and then having the situation where it seems like there's no way out of it. So it becomes a point of despair, a point of acceptance, and this laziness becomes a part of culture.
There's nobody to challenge. And that, in essence, is kind of a microcosm for what corporations get in terms of their corporate welfare. They're used to having a government that they can fucking give money to, they can work with. They're used to being able to grease palms in order to get things passed that are illegal.
Yeah.
They're used to say, oh, this isn't illegal? Well, guess
what? But my
what good is a fucking law if you can't rewrite it? Because then that affects millions of other people's lives. To me, when I look at the rich-poor divide, it was funny. My grandmother said some funny thing to me at the table today. She goes, you know, rich people need to be in our prayers too. And I said... Yeah, he said, you know, people pray for poor people all the time, she told me. He said, but we need to pray for rich people too, because unfortunately their God is money, and they're lost. Some of them are lost, and they just don't know what the hell they're doing and how much they're hurting people.
Well,
now, mind you, I'm not a religious fanatic. You know,
what do you mean? Then they're hurting people by being
rich?
No.
I'm not saying they're hurting people by being rich. But if you think that you can just solve everything with money and that is what your primary focus is, because unfortunately...
They're not trying to solve everything with money. They're trying to rack up a good score.
But it's not even that. It's now they think that that particular piece of number behind them makes them better than other people. Mm-hmm. And in some cases...
Score.
And in some cases, they can live a... No, actually...
Well, they
in
do.
Most
it's
cases,
a game.
They live a much better life.
Well, it's a game. Capitalism is a game. It's not... The capitalism is not the problem. It's the abandonment of humanity while pursuing capitalism. It's not pursuing a game. It's pursuing a game but without worries about the consequences of the environment or the human cost.
But I don't think we play real capitalism. Capitalism involves like other people that have competition. When we go to a country and we engage in a kleptocracy mm-hmm. to take over things, that's not real capitalism. They don't have their own little African diamond company that competes with De Beers uh-huh. and the rest of them.
Right.
What they have is a monopoly. They might have the semblance of what capitalism is within the confines of certain sectors of the United States, but outside of this country, real capitalism doesn't exist that way. Our relationship with England and that capitalist relationship is very different from our relationship with, let's say, Colombia and that relationship with capitalism, where we say we're going to prop up a state by, it doesn't matter what the human rights violations are, we're just going to prop you motherfuckers up and you're going to get us what we want, which is control of the particular region. You have the Atlantic and you have the Pacific, your neighboring countries.
Well, it comes down to the same thing. Don't be a cunt. It really comes down to behavior. It comes down to the same goddamn thing everywhere you go. You could wrap it up in capitalism or economic gain or call it whatever the fuck you want to call it. The real problem is doing things at the expense of other people, fucking people up. It's not whether or not people are rich. And it's not the problem with you're not going to have any equality until everybody is equal. No one's ever equal in this fucking world. No one's going to be equal. Someone's going to be smarter. They're going to be faster. They're going to have a bigger dick. There's no equal. You got your fucking roll of the dice. Now you need to make hay, motherfucker. And that's what's missing in a welfare state. And the problem with the idea that everybody has to be equal. No, you have to work harder to be equal. Mm. But you have to also have an even playing field, which we don't even have that. Right. So it's not even that people are impoverished and there's a direct path.
But then
people are impoverished and there's no training, there is no education, there's no protection from their environment, the violence of
well, because
that
if,
comes
if
with
we're
a
using
poor
the
environment
cunt factor, then there's no interest in them making them into
exactly
able factors parts of society. You know why? Because they can make money for us in the prison system.
Well,
and this is what we're
they
can
also make money. See, that's just because that system's in control. It's been hijacked. You can make money from having look. If you have money, big money for defense contractors in Iraq and rebuilding companies like Halliburton that come in and build shit back up after we blow it the fuck apart. Well, then you could also have big contracts to shape up ghettos. You could have the same.
Rebuild Detroit.
Exactly. Have the same kind of money involved in putting forth some sort of an effort to fulfill the potential of young human beings. To take young human beings in any sort of impoverished area where they don't have a whole lot to look forward to, they don't have a whole lot of options, and provide those. I've always said, you want to strengthen a country, make less losers. Okay, that's the thing. You want less people robbing people, less people in jail, more people producing. The only way to do that is to take care of the most important resource we have, and that's young people. That's babies. That's children. Mm-hmm. That's the life. And where's the life becoming the most fucked up? Where is it? Well, in the most impoverished areas. It's the most difficult. It's harder to get away from the crime and the gangs and all. Well, we need to correct that. But no politician has ever lifted a fucking finger for that because they can't make money. We have to figure out a way to make money and fixing things up. We have to figure out a way where Halliburton gets on mushrooms and they go, we're going to rebuild ghettos instead of going over to fucking Iraq and blowing shit up and then rebuilding it back. Let's rebuild ghettos.
But I think the problem is that even if you wanted to do it and even if they agreed to do it, there would always be some kind of hidden agenda there. Like, you know, we're going to
well, that's because they're not on mushrooms.
We're going to rebuild the ghetto so that we can turn all of these kids that are coming out of here into
only
fucking soldiers.
If you're a cunt. If you weren't a cunt, you wouldn't do that. So it goes back to my thing. Don't be a cunt.
Don't be a cunt.
That's everything. That is everything. The Buddha doesn't teach that shit.
You need to put on a t-shirt.
Somebody else do it.
Right now.
Go make some money. Don't be a cunt.
No. Just get like a little Buddha right there on the t-shirt.
It says, Buddha says, don't be a cunt.
Buddha says on the back, don't be a cunt.
I think I'm going to have an American flag one. And it's just going to say, we're America and we're not cunts. Because I think that's even better. That's the perfect ideal. Everybody looks at America. We don't look at America.
I'm an American. And then the back, it says, but I'm not a cunt.
That too. But I think it's better to say it all in one sentence. We're America and we're not cunts.
Or we have the best cunts.
Do we?
Like girls.
I don't think we do.
Girl cunts.
I think Brazil's got us beat.
No.
Maybe Japan?
It's dirty.
What? Shut your fucking mouth.
Joe is Team Brazil. Big shout out to everybody. Hold on. Big shout out to everybody that's listening from Brazil and from Japan. And
yeah, we get people listening to us from everywhere. Yeah, big shout out to Brazil. Big shout out to Tijuana. I met a lot of people in San Diego that came up from Tijuana.
TJ.
Yeah, that's a fucking long trip, man. You're a Mexican dude. You want to go see some comedy? They're like, yeah, right. You got to answer some fucking questions. Have a dog sniff your car for everything that ever has been invented. All right, you dirty bitches. This podcast is over. Thanks, brother. It was awesome. Good time. We're almost at 3 hours. So at 3 hours, our podcast becomes a pumpkin.
I wanted to give you this gift before we get out of here.
Okay, what is it, man?
This is a Mortal Technique T-shirt.
Oh shit! Bang, Brian's bang. Got one on right now,
bang,
ladies
bang,
and gentlemen.
Bang, yeah. Bang.
Looking at Ustream.
Here we go.
Check out Brian.
And then, I got the album I just given him, and then the other albums.
You got
I
a Death Squad T-shirt on, son.
Bang, bang, bang!
These Death Squad T-shirts are available at DeathSquad.tv.
And I got
this
documentary movie. It's with myself, also Cornel West, Ice-T, KRS-One, Chuck D, Woody Harrelson.
Oh, they did a documentary on you.
Yeah, and then also it's about artistic freedom and stuff like that. You can get it at ViperRecords.com, directed by my friend Carrie Stewart.
Dude, you have your own documentary.
Yeah, but we got
that's pretty sporty.
Trying to be as focused as I can.
You got to be humble when you have your own documentary, man. It's a real problem. You get your own documentary, man. It's hard not to think.
If I don't shout out the following people, they're going to go crazy. Big shout out to Swave Seva, Diabolical.
These are the first shout outs ever in the history of the Joe Rogan Experience
CF,
podcast.
CF, Hassan, Static, G.I. Joe, J. Arch, Chino XL, Bout It, Poison Pen, Rebel Arms Forever. You already know. Stronghold, baby.
Shout out to Alienware MMA. Follow Alienware MMA on Twitter. They provided us with these badass computers.
Bang.
We support them because they support mixed martial arts fighters.
Yeah.
A lot of fighters that are supported by Alienware. And I'm a big fan of supporting companies that help out fighters, especially guys up and coming, and sponsor them. And Alienware does that. So thank you to them. Thank you to Onnit.com. Go to O-N-N-I-T. Get yourself some Alpha Brain, son.
Yeah.
I was on it the entire podcast. Be like, damn, where's Joe Rogan coming up with these ideas? I tell you, it's weed and Alpha Brain.
Weed,
combined.
Alpha Brain, and then that creates the octopus with the fucking shark.
A shout out to all you silly bitches in the LA City Council that decided to ban these medical marijuana dispensaries. You all need to do some fucking yoga classes while you're high on a pot brownie so you understand what the fuck you're blocking. You're blocking evolution. You're blocking love. You're blocking camaraderie. And you're blocking medicine from sick people. You're blocking medicine that can cure cancer, like cured Tommy Chong's fucking cancer. You're making it difficult for something awesome to get around. That's what you're doing. You think you're protecting people from crime. You're not. You're just making it difficult for something awesome to get around. Pot is awesome, and you need some fucking pot. Everybody who wants to stop pot needs pot. That's reality. Pot is love. God is love. Go to Onnit.com. Get yourself some Alpha Brain.
Shout
get yourself some Shroom Tech Sport.
It's part of the history of America. Don't deny it.
Don't
That's
deny
just
it.
What it is.
Dirty bitches. Don't
get,
deny it.
Get
yourself
us.
Some kettlebells and put in a fucking manly workout. Get some battle ropes from Onnit.com. Get
you
your swole
know.
On, kid. Increase your libido. Increase your thrusting power. You got to have those strong lower back muscles to put a hard fucking on somebody. What is this you're showing us, Brian?
It's half shark, half octopus.
Oh, there's a real thing?
It's called
Sharktopus. You said that and you didn't even know.
I know somebody who.
Oh, look at it. It's hilarious.
Get the fuck out of here.
Oh, this thing is awesome.
Shout out to Olive Garden.
Yeah, shout out to all right, Onnit.com. Get yourself some kettlebells. Use the code name Rogan, and you will save yourself 10% off Alpha Brain, Shroom Tech Sport, Bone Strong. We got a bone strengthening supplement, ladies and gentlemen. All the information and the science behind all this stuff is at Onnit.com. O-N-N-I-T. Use the code name Rogan. Save yourself 10% off. But we can't give any more money off the kettlebells because they're as cheap as we can sell them. You can't get any better battle ropes. You can't get any cheaper battle ropes. Go get them, you dirty bitches, at Onnit.com. Look at this. Sharktopus is the greatest thing of all time.
We out of here.
Thank you to Immortal Technique. Follow him on Twitter, Immortal Tech, T-E-C-H, on Twitter. And follow Brian Redband, R-E-D-B-A-N. Death Squad Super Show, Friday night, 10:30 here at the Ice House with Mad Flavor, a.k.a. Joey Diaz. Brian Redband right in front of me. Josh McDermott, our pal, originally from Phoenix, Arizona. What show is he on? What is that show again? What show is Josh on? He's on a show.
Retired at 35, I think it is.
Well, we'll find out when we see him. He'll be on the Ice House Chronicles as well, which is only available on Death Squad on iTunes. So go check that out. We love you guys. And we'll see you tomorrow with Rob Wolf, the inventor of the paleo diet. Friday, it's Maynard from Tool. Holla!
I'll see you all in August when I come back for this tour.
Immortal Technique, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm out of here, baby.
He will return. He will return.
Way past your bedtime, okay?
How did you afford all that polo? I know you didn't pay for it.
Whoa! All right, man. Who's been talking to you, yo? Never mind. Go to sleep.